high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across the entire world. In the greatest part of it right now, our part, it's Halloween. Welcome to Ghost 2001. This is a night when all we do is tell ghost stories, nothing else. I know there's a world of things going on out there, but we don't do it on this night. We do one thing only, and we do it very well. We tell ghost stories, real ghost stories, and there's no lack of them ever. Now, I want to qualify this by saying right up front, no lame ghost stories. Only the scariest, most hair-raising ghost stories that a person could ever relate. That's all we're taking. So if yours doesn't meet up with those qualifications, sit back and listen, because there'll be plenty that will. So those are the rules. Those are the only rules. Your ghost story had better be good. And you should be a good storyteller, too. So that's it. That's all we're doing tonight. I'd like to welcome KLYQ in Hamilton, Montana, 1240 on the dial in Hamilton, Montana. Glad to have you on board the network. That's just great as we continue to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. This is an unusual Ghost to Ghost tonight. It is an unusual Halloween. It is the first Halloween full moon since the year 1955, and it is the only one until 19 Halloweens more pass. I believe it is a blue moon, blue or not. It's the only full one since 55, and the only full one for 19 more years. So that's the agenda tonight. I never have had any doubt that ghosts are real. I know they're real after having presided over this program for the last, I don't know how many years, decade plus many now. I know they're real. I guess the question in my mind about ghosts became somewhat moot probably about 4 or 5 years ago. After doing so many of these and after observing things I have observed, I just came to the conclusion that it obviously is real. There really are ghosts, which means that there is survival of physical death. Anyway, nothing but the prime grade A ghost stories are allowed tonight. So before you dial, consider, do you have, are you in possession of, is the best ghost story of all time emblazoned in your mind? If it is, dial. Otherwise, sit back and listen. That's what's coming up. Nothing but ghosts all night long. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Ghost to Ghost AM. Now, one more time, this is your opportunity to phone in the best, scariest ghost story that any of us have ever heard. The scarier, the better. And if it's really, really scary, I'll be really, really happy. Why? Because I'll know that we're having good stories on the air, and I like to be scared like everybody else. You know, doing these shows, really, it scares the hell out of you after a while. A lot of times it just plain scares the hell out of you. But there is fun in fear, some types of fear. This kind of fear seems to be fun. Well, it's fun in the telling. It's not as much fun in the doing, as you will discover listening throughout the night. So, let us begin. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hi.
Art?
Yes.
Good evening. A ghoulish good evening to you.
And to you as well, sir.
Yes. This story takes place, actually I'm Rex, I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hmm.
And this story takes place about 10 years ago when I was working as a photo lab assistant in Yosemite National Park, California.
Yes, sir.
One evening after I had finished talking with my folks, I was walking home along the Merced River, and very pleasant evening, and recently I'd been looking into the folklore, the mythology, some of the history of Yosemite Valley,
mm-hmm.
which had to do with the Miwok Indians and this sort of thing. Now, as I was approaching my cabin, the tent cabins that all of us employees stayed in,
I
had absolutely nothing in my mind, completely blank. And I believe that contributed to what happened next.
How frequently in your life have you noticed that you've had a completely blank mind? That is somewhat unusual in itself.
Yes, it was.
I mean, just all of a sudden you said to yourself, wow, I'm not thinking about a damn thing.
Exactly.
All right, so anyway, there you were in that state, and what happened?
Exactly. Well, I approached my tent cabin. As I was standing on my door, unlocking the lock, I felt there was something very strange inside this cabin. It was twilight, it was dusk, there was no sound going on.
You just felt something was there, or you felt something?
I felt something.
Describe it.
Sort of like I could almost feel an aura radiating from inside it, and it wasn't a very pleasant aura.
Okay.
So I opened the door, and pitch blackness was inside this cabin. It was like I was looking into dark matter.
Darker than black.
Darker than black.
Yeah.
And this dark matter turned and looked at me.
Looked at you?
Looked at me.
Well, to perceive that, you must have seen, or did you just feel that? I mean, how did you know it was looking at you?
You know how some people have this third eye, this kind of a psychic sense kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like this thing turned and looked into my soul,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yes, and was it as empty as your head?
Almost.
Sorry, I couldn't get that.
But what happened after I felt this thing was looking at me?
Yes.
I felt it rush at me, like a hurricane kind of force. It's like that poltergeist swoosh.
Oh, Lordy, yes.
And I remember this thing hit me, and I completely blanked out. I remember being in this white light, but all I could hear was this ghastly scream.
So it was just good night for you, huh?
Well, actually, this white light hit me, and then about a fraction of a second later, I remember landing on my back, and I looked back up at my cabin, and I was 15 feet away from the door.
My,
I don't know how
my,
I got there.
My. You had not been drinking, nor...
I just got off of work. Just finished talking with my folks, and I walked
sober
on.
As can be.
Exactly.
What do you think happened to you?
I had the feeling that it had something to do with the tragedy of the Indian situation in Yosemite Valley. I don't know. I can't really explain it too much.
Maybe. I'm going to offer an alternative theory that you may not like. Obviously, what I picked up on in your story was that you were thinking about absolutely nothing, which is rare. I mean, have you ever caught yourself out there, folks? Wow, I'm not thinking about anything. I wonder if I'm okay. It's not something you do every day. So anyway, his mind was blank. His words. When your mind is blank, you are in an interesting, susceptible moment. Really. If the neurons aren't particularly firing in any direction, and it happens, you know, it does happen, then you are very susceptible. So what may have happened to him may have happened at that exact moment, because he was so vulnerable. Interesting. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art Bell. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Where are you?
This is Anthony in Macon, Georgia.
All right.
And I'd like to relay this ghost story to you before I transform into a Canis Lupus. So this story...
Do you do that from time to time?
Occasionally. Occasionally I do. Especially on nights like this. But about 1975, I was approximately 6 years old. I was visiting my grandmother here in Macon, Georgia, and this was shortly after my grandfather had passed away. He was an avid golfer, and he had a heart attack on the golf course.
Appropriate.
Yes, dying while he was doing what he does best. And
or liked best, or loved.
Exactly.
That's the way
exactly.
to go. Sure.
And we were visiting my grand parents' house. Now my grandmother was just residing there. And this house had an added-on room that my grandfather had built, designed and built. He was an architectural student from Georgia Tech,
right.
Graduated from Georgia Tech. And this room he had built and designed. And when we had visited, I would stay in that room, and the extra bedroom in there.
Sure.
And one night I was in there, fell asleep. I wake up out of nowhere. I don't know what woke me up. I just woke up, and at the foot of the bed was a glowing figure, white glowing figure.
Okay.
Staring at me. Now, there was no sort of facial expression.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, right. There was no face, okay. No facial expression, but it was facing me because it just, you know, seemed to be staring at me, sort of an outstretched sort of arms, but you didn't see any arms. It was sort of just maybe sort of a flowing sort of gown.
That'd be enough for me. You would know it was a spirit.
Exactly, exactly. So, like any 5-6-year-old young man would do, I ducked under the sheets. I said, whoa, wait a minute. You
know, that would have been my move, too.
Right.
Under the covers.
Exactly. Because you're always safe there.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, took another peek. And on that peek, it was still there.
And oh, that's bad. Because usually when you come out from under the covers, it's gone.
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
It was gone. It was still there. And then I went under the covers again. And I did not return up from the covers. And I fell back asleep. But get this.
Yes.
Now, this is the kicker. When I woke up the next morning,
yes, sir,
on the ground near the foot of the bed was a golf ball.
So your granddad had been there and left a sign for you, a golf ball.
I would either that or somebody was playing a elaborate hoax on me. But I still have his golf clubs and I have some of his golf balls. So maybe they just happened to be in that room and I just didn't notice them when I went to bed. But it was an eerie thing.
I hear you. All right, thank you. Yes, the covers. The covers were always refuge from. For me, it was things in the closet. To this very day, I cannot abide an open closet while I sleep. I will not go to sleep with an open closet. Because a little 6-year-old Art was absolutely certain there was something in his closet. Certain. And I was manic about having the closet closed, and how's this for an admission? I still am. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
I'm okay, sir. Where are you?
My name is John. I'm calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
All right, John.
Got kind of an unusual story. Just to give you a little bit of background, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota.
Yes.
Grew up with a pretty good knowledge of the spirit world or demons or ghosts or what have you, that stuff existed. I believe that it existed.
Sure.
Always felt like there was something in my room when I was growing up. Used to have strange dreams sometimes. I would have dreams where I felt like I was being spiritually attacked, where when I woke up I couldn't speak, or when I'd go to sleep, it seemed like the moments between being awake and going to sleep could be a lot of fear.
There is a lot of fear. That's when people have OBEs. That's when they have things that freeze them in place. I mean, paralyze them completely. That's when I think you're susceptible to best seeing across the veil anyway.
Yes, I agree. That's a good way of putting it. I think that's a time when you're sort of wide open to anything that's looking for you.
Absolutely.
And like I said, I grew up with this, and I think people are real resilient because I think you can grow up around this sort of stuff. And even as I got older, things would happen or something would drop in my room, and I'd come up with an explanation of how it could have happened. But everything will culminate when I'm about to tell you. But anyway, I joined the Army in 1989. Summer of 89, and about 8 months before that, something really strange happened. Now, what I'll tell you is at the time, my mother and father were separated, and eventually a couple years later, they would get a divorce.
Right.
At the time that this story happened, My father had not been living with us for probably about 4 or 5 months, quite a while.
Right.
I'm sitting in the living room one night watching TV. My brother was in his room, which is on the other side of the living room wall.
Yes.
And I saw my father walk through our house.
As a solid being. Your real dad? I mean, he was...
Absolutely. And people, when I tell this story, people always say, well, what year did your father die? He didn't die. He's still alive today.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of strange. Well, anyway, he walked through the hallway, and there was a door open on one corner of the living room, and that's where I saw him. And I was so convinced that it was him, and it was about 9:30 at night. You know, what would he be doing coming home at 9:30 at night, and he hadn't lived there 4 or 5 months?
Right.
You don't think of that right then.
Of course not.
So I get up, and I follow him into my parents' bedroom, and when I had been in there for, I guess, about 10 seconds or something, I felt a very real presence, the same kind of thing that I felt growing up, going to sleep in my room, that same kind of feeling that, very hard to describe, but... You know, I know
the feeling. No need to describe it.
Right. There's something else in the room that's a sentient being of some type.
Absolutely.
And that's when I, you know, kind of got scared and left the room. And then I walked down the hallway, and I met my brother in his room. And he said, did Dad just walk by? And I said, yes, he did.
What? Really?
Absolutely. Now, the really strange part about it is my father was wearing a particular sweatshirt that I remember him wearing a lot when I grew up. He used to wear it when he'd work on cars in the garage.
Yes.
So I still remember to this day he had this purple sweatshirt on and a pair of blue jeans, and he wasn't wearing shoes. He was walking in a pair of socks, and he was kind of walking sort of forward on his toes. That's the way he used to walk through the house.
And you're telling me that your dad was not dead.
Your dad
was still alive, right?
Right. I mean...
That's really fascinating, and it's about the second or third story of its kind that I've ever heard. But I have heard a couple of others, sir.
Well, and that's kind of what I'm wondering, and I hope maybe you or somebody could shed some light on this, because I've heard of something called a doppelganger.
Oh, there's a million different explanations for it. Thank you very much. A million different explanations, but... One possible explanation is that all living things, present and past, have a spirit that can leave the body. This has been a particular point of interest, actually, for me for some time. Ghosts of the living. What does that mean? If there are really ghosts of the living, as there are certainly of the dead, then it says something fairly profound, I think, about the nature of spirit itself, the nature of the soul itself, doesn't it? It's an area that I would like to see some ghost investigators really bore in on. They tend not to do it, I think, because to them a ghost has to be dead, out of the old living body to be a ghost. Well, I have a different vision of all of this, and it includes the possibility that every living and passed on soul has a nature of spirit that we don't fully understand yet, but the kind of call we just had, the kind of report we just got, begins to take us down a path of understanding that may buck up against some of the mainstream thinking, if you can call ghosts and stories about ghosts mainstream at all ever. Probably not. I'm Art Bell, and this is Ghost to Ghost AM.
You're the devil in the sky.
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
A full moon, a blue moon, decorates our Halloween Ghost Program 2001. I'm Art Bell. In the nighttime. Good evening, everybody. Ghost to Ghost continues right now with all of you. You'll convince yourselves before the evening's over. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Art, I have a...
West of the Rockies, call toll-free, 1-800-618-8255. Okay, I've got to bleep out your last name. You're not allowed to give your last name. So you made me hit the button. Your first name is Burke, and you're in Washington, right?
That's right.
Okay, Burke, what's up?
Well, back in 1991, I was a student at the International Summer School in Oslo, Norway.
Uh-huh.
I was one of 60 students and two professors who took the long weekend trip from Oslo to Bergen and back.
Yes, sir.
And on the last leg of our trip, we stopped in a place called Blåfarverka. That means the blue color works. It refers to the small glass-blowing factory there.
Yes.
Well, we went into this Viking-style longhouse with picnic tables and sat down to eat dinner. Here we were in Norway, and what do you think they served us? Chili.
Reindeer?
No, chili.
Chili?
Yes.
Chili.
I couldn't believe it. The guy sitting across from me was from Texas. His name is Andrew.
I bet he could believe it.
Oh, yeah. He said something like, oh, boy, chili. They knew I was coming.
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't like chili. I just ate bread. It's a nice dinner rolls for us. After we finished eating, Andrew picked up this sugar cube from a little bowl. He said, you see this? I'm going to feed it to that goat out there.
Goat?
Goat, yes. There was a little barnyard with a little barn. I think it was a petting zoo.
Oh, yes. All right.
Well, anyway, I said to Andrew, you can't do that. It says on the sign out there in Norwegian, English, and German, please don't feed the animals.
Right.
He said, oh, yeah? Watch me.
I've known kids just like your brother.
What?
I've known kids just like your brother.
No, he's not my brother.
Oh, like this guy, anyway.
Yes, Andrew.
Andrew.
Yes, well, we walked outside. Andrew stepped over the two-rail fence. He walked around the corner of the little barn. Then he came running back, climbed back over the fence, and said to me, that goat was evil. It wanted to kill me. He looked around, and he said, hey, look at that mine over there. Let's explore it. And I said, you got lost in that castle in Bergen. You have a bad sense of direction.
You're going to have to get to the point of the story.
Yes. We walked into this mine. He looked to the left, and he said, hi, how are you? Yeah! There's a human head in there.
A human head.
A human head. I looked, and there was.
A human head.
Yes, it had purple skin, no eyes, sunken cheeks, and brown, disheveled hair. When I saw that, I made a noise like, and I turned away. When I looked back, it was gone.
The human head was gone.
It was gone, yes.
All right, I appreciate your call. Human head story. Purple skin, huh? Well, I haven't seen one of those. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Yes, sir. I'm a retired police officer from the Midwest.
Yes, sir.
This happened about 15 years ago. This has bothered me ever since I went on this call. It was a domestic disturbance non-domestic. When I arrived, a lady told me that there was some loud thumping going on in her condominium. She lived on the bottom floor of a two-story condominium complex.
Right.
And she walked me to the center, and sure enough, here sound like somebody hitting the floor with a sledgehammer.
Hitting the floor?
Yes.
And she lived on the bottom floor?
She lived on the bottom floor, and okay. it was just unbelievably loud. I said, well, we'll need to get the manager and go upstairs and see what's going on. She says, well, nobody lives there. I said, all right, well, we'll still need to get the manager and see what the problem is. I ruled out water pipes because no water run through that area.
Sure.
The manager, we finally got a hold of. This was 1 o'clock in the morning. We went inside, and she said, what is the problem up here? I don't understand this. And I said, well, the loud thumping. And she said, well, no one's lived in here for about 6 weeks. This is where Colonel Wilson died.
Oh.
And I said, I had stepped it off from the front of her condominium to the point of the noise right above us.
So you were standing about where it would have come from.
Right, and I also stepped it off from the empty condominium to the point where the noise would have come from.
Yes, sir.
And she put her, and the manager put her hands on either side of her face and said, "Oh my God, that's exactly where his head was laying when we got him, when we found him."
Another human head story. Oh my God.
No, I mean he had died of a heart attack. But
no, I understand.
Laying right there.
Yep.
And anyway, it was just really strange how everything coordinated and was exactly in a line right where he was lying.
Well, it's unusual, you know, that a police officer would actually get to observe all of this. Usually it's all over by the time you're there on this kind of story.
I wrote it up.
Oh, you did?
And I knew I'd be ridiculed for it also, but I wasn't. And I never heard a thing about it. But I said I heard the noise. It was loud, and it was very loud. It sounded like something 10 or 12 pounds being dropped right on the floor. And
well, let me ask you this. I have had endless emails from law officers all over the country about these kinds of things. Inevitably, of course, they don't want their names used. But a disproportionate number of people in law enforcement seem, you know, to run into this now, you know, or something like it.
Well, really, a lot
of you.
We're normally the ones called on problems. That's why we hear about it more, I'm sure.
Makes sense.
But as actually being there, like you said, being there when it's happening was very strange. I've been retired a couple of years now, but it has bothered me ever since that call. And evidently this lady had moved not too long after that because the thumping just continued.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it hit about four times and stopped. And she says this will do periodically throughout the night.
I'd move, too.
I would have moved, too.
Thank you so much.
You better.
Take care. That suggests a spirit behind, you know, a spirit left behind. And that brings up all kinds of questions about whether we're really conscious on the other side, and apparently we are. I think from everything I've heard, from all the investigations I've done into ghost phenomena, I would have to say I think we're probably conscious on the other side, although it seems fairly clear that an awful lot of the dead don't know they're dead. They simply don't know they have died. And that's interesting because you would think any attempted interaction of a consciousness on the other side would immediately notice, hey, something's wrong here. I'm passing through walls. People aren't hearing me. Something. You know, I'm dead. Or maybe it's not that easy. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you doing tonight?
All right.
This is Dean calling from Tampa, Florida.
Yes, sir.
And one thing I would like to say is I agree with you. I think we actually exist on many different levels, in fact, and even as in life and as we pass to death, I think in a sense, I think a lot of us in our sense of awareness, we tend to almost tune into that, and I think we each get glimpses of it, but maybe not the full picture.
And maybe that's intended.
I think so, sir. I would like to give you just a moment of clarity here. After I'd actually met a young girl named Clarity in 1985, I had a couple of after effects, actually. And I think there's a positive side to actual spirits that you might actually encounter, and I think in a sense it might actually be a protection in a sense. And I've seen this in children and things like that, and I've heard stories about that. I had an experience. I was driving to Irving, Texas, in fact, on a major highway coming out of Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. And I just bought a new car. I'm driving down. It's about early 1986. As I'm just coming onto the highway, this rather large 1970 Cadillac, one of those old ones about 9 feet long, sir.
Sure.
Yeah, it kind of takes one of those. He decides he wants to take a right and go across three different lanes. Suddenly, he just cuts right in front of me, and I start doing 360s on the highway. And this is right at rush hour. We're talking three-way highway, you know, three-lane highway.
Right.
As I'm doing 360, sir, I'm starting to come up over on two wheels, and I start noticing, like, almost literally, as I look back on it, almost an angelic whirlwind of just, and I couldn't, it wasn't like people, but it was almost like a sense of protection because I can almost remember how quiet it was as I'm doing these 360s, going up on two wheels and watching people drive around me, yet not being touched. And the most amazing thing is after I crossed four lanes of traffic, I suddenly realized I'm going backwards. I look up, and in my rearview mirror, sir, somebody's sitting in my back seat.
Holy smokes.
Well, number one, I was by myself. As I looked back in front, I noticed all traffic had stopped, and I'm slamming on my brakes. I look up back again, in the midsection, the actual barrier between the actual two highways.
Right.
I'm coming upon that, and I'm doing about 40 backwards. As I'm looking up in the rearview mirror, well, whoever was sitting in my back seat, well, they're gone now. So I'm appreciative of that because I didn't want to have to deal with that. But secondly, I'm watching the barrier and me coming up doing about 40. I stop within about 3 feet of it. Not a scratch on the car, nothing. I've completely stopped rush hour traffic in the middle of Dallas-Fort Worth. Everybody's literally walking out of their car looking at me like I've just filmed some stunt movie.
And you were no doubt convinced you'd been saved by some sort of angelic presence.
Exactly, sir.
And All right. And to make it...
Yes, sir. To make it very quickly and short, 2 weeks later, I'm coming around a little S turn in Irving, Texas. Suddenly it's a rainy thing. All of a sudden, I start losing the grip of the car. I'm just starting to go over a cliff. Suddenly I stop, sir. I got out of the car. I look around. There's handprints in the front of my car as the rain's dropping like that. You can literally see it. Somebody tried to stop my car. There are people out there protecting us, sir.
Shades of San Antonio, Texas. All right. Well, that is interesting. Have you ever wondered, when you see an accident that's so horrible, you know, a car is totaled, it's mushed, there's nothing, and somehow somebody came through it completely unscathed? It occurs. These things happen. And a lot of times you get stories like the one that man just told. No matter what chaos was around him at the moment, the instant all of this occurred, and it does occur, of course, basically, in an instant, an accident like that, he kind of gave it to us in slow motion. It may well be that, and who knows why, but there may be some protection. And of course, everybody would say, well, then why doesn't everybody get protected? I don't know. They just don't. But something that, through it all, won't let you get touched, no matter the mayhem all around you. You hear about these miracles, seeming miracles, all the time. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art. How are you this evening?
Okay.
All right. Well, this was about the middle of last July.
Where are you, sir?
This is Dave and Christopher.
Dave?
Yes.
Okay, Dave.
All right. And we were up camping in White Pines up at the northern end of Illinois.
Right.
And we had just finished a late dinner, and we were sitting around a roaring campfire, starting to get cool out. And we decided to do what most people do around a campfire, see if we could drum up a few ghost stories. Okay. So we're sitting around, and everybody's trying to think, and all of a sudden there's a rustling behind us in the dark,
yeah.
You know, the trees and such. And we look over, and out comes this little black cat.
Yes.
And you know how some cats are very socialized. They come by, and they rub up against you. Okay, well, this little thing came and got up in between the people and the fire, and started, as she walked by, she'd give you the little tail hug, like, you
right.
know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, so she's walking around, and people are just watching her walk and touch and walk and hug, and she gets around to these two girls that are just about the other side of the fire from me. And as she does, she stops for a moment, and the girl, who absolutely loves cats, reaches over and starts to give her a scritch on the back.
Right.
And the tail goes up, and all of a sudden the girl darts back screaming, turned completely white, and the girlfriend next to her does the same thing. As it turned out, when she had reached over to scritch the cat, she had actually gone through the cat.
Her hand went through the cat.
After this cat had walked around half the people at the campfire, touching and hugging as she walked by, rubbing their leg, and everybody swears up and down they felt the cat.
Yes.
Felt the fur.
Yes.
And everybody starts looking around for the cat, and the cat's gone. All right? And there's nothing but, like, a wall of thicket and leaves back where the cat must have gone. Somebody picks up one of these Q-beams, goes back in the direction of where we thought the cat had gone, and there's nothing there.
Uh-huh. That's fascinating.
So
puts her hand right through the cat, huh?
Puts her hand almost right through the cat. As she starts to scratch it, it's like it just started to...
No. I understand.
It would produce
a scream, all right. Yes, very, very interesting. Thank you. Now, of course, that suggests that we ponder the possibility of animals also being ghosts, the spirit of animals surviving physical death and appearing to us. Or does it suggest the possibility of something that transforms itself into another state? I don't know. You decide. west of the Rockies. You are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Where are you?
I am in Oregon, Elmira.
All right. Good. Well,
first, Anisha.
And your first name is?
Anisha.
Anisha. That's a good name.
Thank you. Yes, I have a story. It was from my grandmother.
Sure.
Her father was dying. He was in the hospital. And one day she came home. She was doing the dishes. And then all of a sudden she could not breathe. So she had to go outside. And there was this intense light.
Huh.
And she still couldn't breathe. Later, after about 15 minutes, I do believe.
Right.
Finally, she could breathe, and she felt a sense of relief.
Well, during a 15-minute period, she had to catch a breath or two.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so she was more or less fine after about that period. Yeah.
And then her mother, my great-grandmother, and the minister came and told her that her father had died.
Huh.
And
so you think it was at that that period of time that she could not breathe that the death was occurring?
Yes, I do believe so, and that's what she believes also. And just a couple weeks ago, my great-grandmother is ailing, and she was talking with somebody, and the only thing I really understood was Wally, which was my great-grandfather. So I do believe that he is trying to contact her and help her through.
Okay, well, consider this. It seems like young children and old people, particularly those who are close to death or near death, begin to see through the veil, begin to see the other side more readily. Now, people who work in, you know, homes for the elderly and things like that
mm-hmm.
can tell you stories about this all day long. Now, of course, they sometimes put it off to a feeble mind close to death, but most of them don't. And when you really pin them down, they believe that these people are being visited by dead relatives and that some are coming by trying to ease the transition. Exactly what you said.
All right. I guess that's it then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Very interesting stuff. But the youngest and the oldest seem to have the best contact with the other side of the veil and can even perhaps readily communicate. It seems to go away. You know, as the busyness of life and the necessity of living in this world we're in today, and it's no easy world, as we all well know today, you know, that takes up all your attention. It closes the opportunity to get through the veil because you simply don't have time for it. But clear your mind like that young man earlier. Or let your mind be young and not yet trained not to see these things. Or let your mind be old, in which case it may well be preparing to go on to the next world. And as you get toward the very end, if you're lucky enough to live that long and don't go by a truck, you know, or some other violent method, and you can feel your death coming, then slowly you are indoctrinated from the other side. That would seem to be the case, and that would seem to be what that story was all about. All right, only the best, only the scariest ghost stories need apply. Everybody else can sit at home and listen. This is Ghost to Ghost 2001. I'm Art Bell. Only the very best stories, folks. Otherwise, just sit there and listen to your radio. Sweet dreams are made of this. Who am I to disagree? To reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. Good morning. Ghost Stories. Running with the night. This night, Halloween 2001, I'm Art Bell. Only if you have the scariest ghost stories should you call. Because that's all we're accepting. stand your hair up on the back of the neck kind of ghost stories. In addition to that, I would like to announce we have two new pages of ghost photographs. And if you would like to give it up this Halloween, I mean that with a ghost photograph you've been hanging up, hanging on to all these years, why, I've got a way for you to finally release it on the world. Send it to my webmaster. That would be webmaster@artbell.com, and we'll get it posted. We are accepting ghost stories as of right now on the web. Send it to webmaster@artbell.com. And like the stories, only the very best photographs get posted. So go to your computers and let's see what we get. And we indeed run back into the night. On the first time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. What is your first name and where are you?
My name's Melanie and I live in Atlanta, Georgia.
Melanie, okay, very good, welcome.
Thank you. Well, let me get started here. I had an extraordinary evening the night that you had a guest, Dr. Evelyn Paglini, is that how you pronounce it?
It is indeed.
Okay, that night, I live on the East Coast, and I went to bed very late. Your show runs very late here.
Yes, it does.
And I went to bed between 4:30 and 5 o'clock that night or that morning, and I was very tired. I immediately went to bed, and my consciousness was alerted. There's something you call shadow people on your website. I've never heard that term before. But I've always called them angels. I've had this happen to me before. And what you call shadow people were running across my bed into my bathroom, which was lit up. It wasn't bright.
Why would you presume they're angels if they're dark? Now, shadow people, as represented on my website, are varying forms, but they're all dark. Were these things that you saw dark?
Yes, they were, but I don't get into dark. I don't get into the dark part of it.
Gotcha. Okay. So you thought of them as angels?
Yes.
And they'd run across you into the bathroom?
In front of my bed. They were running in front of my bed into my bathroom. I live in a very small apartment, and let me just mention that I do live on my own. I'm a single female. Okay, so I was alerted. My apartment wasn't bright.
It
was
maybe they all have little teeny-weeny pea-sized bladders.
Pardon me?
Maybe they all have teeny-weeny pea-sized bladders.
Well, I don't think that's what they were doing.
But
yet.
They were running. They were headed to your bathroom, right?
Yes, they were.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that's what they were doing. I just think that they like to come down and be with me because I've had this happen to me before.
Yes.
Okay. So I was alerted. My consciousness was alerted, but I was still in a sound sleep, and I wanted to wake up. I was frightened because I really thought there was a human being in my apartment, okay, a being that I live on my own. I could not wake up, and they kept on running, and, you know, they were having a party in my apartment.
Huh.
And eventually, like I said, I went to bed between 4:30 and 5 that morning. I eventually woke up. It was very hard for me to wake up. They did not want me to wake up. But eventually I woke up. I went and got a kitchen knife out of my kitchen, and I put it on my nightstand. Went back to bed, woke up the following afternoon between 12 and 12:30.
So you mean you would have sliced up one of these little bundles of joy?
Well, I wouldn't have sliced them up. If there was a human being, I would have sliced the human being
up. I see. All right.
Okay?
Yes.
So, it was so real, I actually thought that there could be an intruder in my apartment. That's how real
I've got the feeling, right? Understand.
Okay. So I don't use an alarm clock. I'm very regular. I wake up between 12 and 12:30 every afternoon. I work in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I wake up, I look at my clock on my nightstand to see how much longer I can sleep before it becomes 12:30.
I do it all the time.
Okay. So I get up, and it's 12:30. The following day, I go to my kitchen to make some coffee, and I notice my clock radio in my kitchen is blinking. Okay, so the power went out.
Right.
I'm waiting for my coffee to brew. I get my coffee. I go back into my room where my computer is, because that's what I do in the morning, is I have my coffee, and I play on my computer.
Yeah.
And I notice the clock radio next to my computer is blinking. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Now, remember, I woke up, and the clock on my nightstand was not blinking.
Yeah, you're right. So...
Hold on.
Okay.
So, I get on my computer. It is on safe mode.
Safe mode.
Safe mode.
For the you non-computer people, that means that it may have lost power and tried to reboot, and reboots in safe mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay. It usually reboots. It's very rare that it goes on safe mode.
It'll
just reboot itself.
Yep, I understand.
Okay. And the day on my computer, the day Dr. Evelyn Paglini was on your show was, I believe, a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that Friday, the day on my computer was changed to Saturday.
Yeah, really?
And it has, what started it all, Mr. Bell, was the night that you did your experiment with Rush Limbaugh.
Uh-huh.
I haven't focused or meditated on something like that in, I'd say, a good 3 years.
Well, you know what that does, yeah. It opens the door. You've got that right. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate the story. Yes, well, the combination of your participation in the experiment and listening to Evelyn Paglini and being in the state that you were in without getting a lot of sleep really had you totally open to this sort of thing. Now, bear in mind, everybody, that generally when there is a ghost scene, if you are able to record it, you will record a significant electromagnetic phenomena associated with an appearance or an occurrence. And a sufficiently large electromagnetic phenomena would affect the electrical circuits that surround you. Bear in mind, the way it happened. First one room, and then another room, then back to the other room. Pretty strange. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art. Happy Halloween.
And same to you, sir.
This is Paul, let's say, from Central Illinois.
Okay.
I'm a sheriff's deputy. And
oh, you are?
Yes. Until a few weeks ago, I worked the midnight shift.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I bought our first house last August. It's a nice, like a 70-year-old house, still in good shape and things like that. Well, one night, it was about September 8th or so,
mm-hmm.
I come home from work, and now my wife, she's a paramedic. She works 24-hour shifts, and on that night she was working, so there shouldn't have been anybody home.
That would be back in what we call September 8th, back in the normal times.
Huh? Yes.
The last of the normal times.
Right, that's what makes it easy to remember.
Sure.
But my wife, she was working that night, so her car was gone. There shouldn't have been anybody home. I came home for a dinner break about 3 o'clock in the morning or so, and I walked in the door, came in the house through the kitchen. As I come in the kitchen, I see the silhouette of a person standing there by the kitchen sink. And remembering I was on duty, of course, the first thing I did, seeing a strange person in my house, was to draw my pistol and point it at this person and tell them to show me their hands.
I'm sure.
Well, there was a little bit of light coming in through the window from a street light, and this person kind of slowly turned her head and looked at me, and I see it's this little old lady.
Huh.
And there was you kind of get that strange feeling, and you start noticing that she was a little bit translucent.
Oh, really?
So I felt kind of silly pointing my pistol at her when I realized what it must be that was going on. So the first thing I could think of to say was, what do you want? And
boy, that's pretty good. You know, some people in your position might have fired that gun. I mean, just out of absolute heart-stopping fright, they might have fired that gun.
It probably wouldn't have done a whole lot of good. I think she was already beyond the point that my pistol could have hurt her very much.
Good that you could realize that. Man.
Anyhow, she looked at me, and she just had this, if you can imagine, a little old lady who's kind of ornery, and just knows that she's pulling the best trick in the world on somebody. She just had that kind of bemused, old lady, ornery look on her face. And so, like I said, I asked her, what do you want? And she just kind of grinned at me and then faded out and disappeared. And we haven't had any, I haven't seen her since then. I mean, she doesn't, move things around in my house or anything. The only thing that ever happens that might be out of the ordinary is every once in a while, if my wife and I are in the living room, watching television or something, we have a dog, And there's been a few times that she goes in the kitchen, because that's where her food dish is, and she's not the kind of dog that spooks easy. She loves people, and, you know, nothing really scares her too much. But she'll be in the kitchen, and we'll just hear her let out a little yip, and then she'll just come running back in the living room and cower at our feet.
Sure.
And whenever she does that, I just imagine that kind of ornery look on that old lady's face and figure she's just playing tricks on my dog. And as long as that's all she does, I guess it doesn't really bother me a whole lot.
Well, I understand. Nevertheless, what do you think you saw?
And I'm sure it was a ghost. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about that. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't asleep. I'd been at work, you know.
I've got you. All right. Thank you so much for the story. Take care. A deputy sheriff. And, of course, seeing is believing. Once you have seen, as that man saw, you will believe. You will never doubt again. You will always know that that there is something over on the other side. Whether that's to be your destination or not, you cannot know until your time has come. But there is certainly something there, something that can come through. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
I'm on the air?
Yes, yes, yes.
Hi, Art.
Your name is?
My name is Dave.
Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I'm from Canal Winchester, Ohio.
Okay.
I just want to start by saying this story began and ended on Halloween night, and it's a pretty scary one, I think.
Okay.
Let me just start by saying I was in college. I was dorming with a few friends. Off campus at an apartment, and about half a mile down the road was a house that I suspected to be haunted. I've seen ghosts before and things like that, which is a whole different story. But I just felt that this house was haunted just from the way it looked, things that were going on, nothing actually was going on there. You never seen anybody. The only thing that ever happened there was that there would be a curtain up in the high window that on occasion was drawn slightly.
This was an unoccupied or occupied house?
I had asked neighbors and other people if they'd seen anybody live there. They said no. It looked like someone had lived there.
I mean, I always kind of live near what I would always think of as a haunted house. You know what they look like. We
right.
all do from having seen
the
movies.
It just seemed haunted. No, you never seen any people. You asked neighbors. They never seen any people. I don't know.
So did you finally decide to investigate?
Yes. That's on Halloween night.
Inevitably.
I convinced some friends. Actually, my girlfriend, who's now I'm getting married to, 9 years later.
She's marrying you?
Yes. This happened 9 years ago.
Well, I guess if you could talk her into doing that.
Yes.
Anyway, but, proceed.
I coaxed her and another couple to, you know, let's go down there. It's Halloween night. Let's see if anything happens. So we take a walk. This house sat right on a creek, pretty large creek. And right across it, right, you know, it was on. There was a bridge there, a wood bridge.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what it was, but nobody had the guts to get too close to the house. We just wouldn't do it. It
right.
seemed ominous. It was Halloween.
Right.
I had convinced them that it was haunted. So what we decided to do is go across the bridge to the other side of the creek, take a walk behind. We're pretty far away. We'll sit there and kind of just check things out, see if anything happens.
Yes.
Well, nothing happens. So we're kind of, well, what are we going to do now? Let's take a walk down the creek a little while. Maybe 150 feet getting past the house, we notice something across the other side of the house. It looks like there's a shack there.
Right.
And we're like, wow, look at that. There's a shack back in the woods. So we all start to approach it, and it appears that someone's sitting inside the shack, actually in the door opening, sitting on a stool with a shotgun in their hand. This is on Halloween night at, you know, 12 o'clock at night. It's midnight.
With a shotgun.
Yeah, it looks like someone's sitting there with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, take off. We run.
Gotcha.
And we catch our breath and we say, you know, I think we know just we're seeing things, you know. There was nothing there. It's dark out. You know, let's go back. Let's go back and see if that really was a shack there. So we do. We go back, and instead of, we still see the shack. It doesn't look like the door's open now. So So I decide, well, me and the guy, friend of the girl, stay behind. And we decide to venture and see what's going on. The closer we get to this shack, it just vanishes.
The shack vanishes?
The closer we get, it just starts to...
Mist out.
It just is gone. There's nothing there. I mean, now we're there where it would be, and we're just standing in the middle of the woods.
Holy mackerel.
The only thing...
Yes?
Exactly at that same moment that we realize the shack isn't there, there's a graveyard of cars. And when I say a graveyard of cars, let me just tell you, the cars that were there, we didn't count them, but there was 30 to 50 Corvairs.
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 A lot of Corvairs
considered to be the most deadliest cars ever.
A lot of Corvairs died.
They weren't crashed or anything. They were just there. You know, they were like, weathered. You know what I mean?
Yes, of course.
They were weathered.
Yes.
It looked like vandals that maybe busted out windows, things like that.
This is too weird. And you're telling me this graveyard of cars was all around you, or where was it with reference?
Hey, come over, see this. Everybody, we were all there now. You know, there's four of us, well, including me.
Four.
And we're standing on top of now cars, Corvairs. They're all Corvairs.
Uh-huh.
They're not damaged at all, other than just look like they had been there for 50 years or however long they were made, you know?
Right, right.
There was just two different cars there, though, and they weren't like that. They were totaled, beyond what you could say was fatal crashes. They were totaled, and I remember what they were, because we were like, it was a Toyota Love Truck. Do you remember those?
Yes, I do.
It was a Toyota Love Truck and some kind of Subaru, and they were crushed to what you would consider to be fatal crashes.
Right.
Corvairs were fine. They were just there. That freaked us out pretty good, you know. We're like, but nothing really that I would say supernatural happened. This was Halloween night. That happened. The night did kind of seem kind of spooky, but that happens on Halloween.
I'd say it's pretty supernatural if a shack completely disappears and a graveyard of cars appears.
Yeah, that's not the end of the story, Art.
Okay, go ahead.
About 9 months later, maybe 9 to 10 months later, it's beginning to be fall. You know, I live in Ohio. It's probably late summer.
Right.
But it was fallish.
Yes.
I had told lots of people about this story. Nobody ever would go back in the woods to find the cars, but they were there. I mean, we went back again during the daylight and seen them there.
Ah.
They were there. They were real.
All right.
The house still seemed haunted and never seen any people there.
All right, we're running short on time.
Okay. About 9 months later, a friend of mine tells me that he's seen a bunch of Corvairs parked around that house. And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, what are you talking about? He said, man, I just drove by there, you know, an hour ago, and I seen a bunch of Corvairs parked around that house you were talking about.
Yes, I am.
So I decided to grab a friend of mine, and we went out there.
And?
And the house was totally destroyed. I don't know how to describe it.
Okay. We have no more time. Is there a punchline here?
No, I'm just telling the story.
Okay, so it was all gone then?
Pretty much.
I appreciate the call, sir. That was paranormal, definitely. Things don't disappear and then become something else. Guys with shotguns in cabins don't disappear. This is Ghost to Ghost AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
You know, Crystal Gayle's making this song available to you on my website free of charge. Actually, her website, we've got the link on my page. Want a free copy? CD quality? It's there.
Midnight in the desert, and there's wisdom in the air. I've been looking for the answers. All my life I found you there. As the world we live in quickens, are we heeding all the signs? Have we lost our intuition? Are we running out of time? Midnight in the desert,
good morning from the high desert on Halloween. Curious what it's going to be like when you die. Stick around tonight. You may well get a glimpse, just a glimpse of what it may be like. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Alan calling. Art, I've listened to your show a few times, I guess, and I've wondered occasionally which one of the calls were real, which ones weren't. But
I don't know. Are you real?
Well, I'll tell you a story.
First of all, turn your radio off.
I thought it was.
No, and I can't continue with the call if you don't. So.
Okay. I guess it began when I was 6 years old. I would swear there was something in my closet. I would watch my closet doors, okay? I knew the exact width of that my closet door was open.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
It began this way. Night after night after night, I would watch it. One morning, the closet doors were completely open. I questioned everybody in the house. No one had touched it. Okay, this is how it began. Secondly, I had one of these things I learned from your program was an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
I was frozen on my bed. Okay, I was tingling all over, and I could not move, and I was scared to death, and I just began praying to Jesus, please, Jesus, please.
That's a precursor to an out-of-body experience, yeah.
Well, I also did the same thing with the door to my room. It was the closet door and my door to the room that I would watch, and there would be a crack in the door, and I would watch that crack every 10 minutes. I would look at it.
Why?
I felt like there was something outside there.
You mean inside the closet?
Inside the closet and also outside the room, outside the bedroom.
Oh, I see.
So, once again, one evening, that door, every time I looked at it, it seemed like it would be a quarter inch or a half inch wider. And it got to the point where it was about 2 inches to 3 inches wide. And one night that was happening and I couldn't move. And I started to look at the door, and so help me, Jesus Christ, as he is my Lord, the door started to have a light green color around the background of it,
yes.
Like the light from behind it,
yes.
And a mist around it. And I got up out of bed because I had been released from this hold that I used to call it. It was just a hold. And as I approached the door, and as my hand reached out to touch the door, praying to God the whole time, the door fell backwards away. Fell backwards away.
Right.
And I ran back into the bed and just covered up and started praying.
Oh, yeah. See, at that point, I'd have a heart attack.
I mean, and I ran into my mother's and father's room, and I slept there all night, and they acted as if nothing was wrong whatsoever.
No, see, that's my nightmare. That's really my nightmare. Oh, God. If I were to walk up to an open closet door to close it, because I don't allow them to be open, I just don't, and the door fell backward, I don't know what I'd do. I'd probably have a heart attack. Absolutely a heart attack. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Ann from the Springfield, Missouri Ozarks.
Hi, Ann.
And I have a story for you a ghost story that completely changed my life.
I bet most ghosts, really, people who have encounters with ghosts have their lives changed, period. But go ahead.
All right. I'm a Cherokee historic reenactor. We're called Buckskinners. We have pre-1840 camps. I own an 18-foot teepee, wear buckskin dresses, cook over the campfire, and sleep on a buffalo robe.
Okay.
In 1994, I attended an 11-day rendezvous. That's what we call our camping events.
Yes.
It was held at Fort Ouachita, Oklahoma. It was an old Confederate Civil War fort and cemetery. There were about 300 camps, hundreds of people dressed in proper period attire. Sunday was the last day of the rendezvous. Saturday afternoon, we celebrated a lovely wedding of a couple complete with medicine man and ritual ceremonies.
Right.
That night, a group of the wedding party got really partied hardy, drinking and loud drumming into the wee hours of the morning. Sunday morning, people started tearing down their camps. My husband and I decided we'd stay through Sunday night and break camp Monday morning. Everyone else was gone. The guy next to us stayed in his trapper's tent. He decided to stay along with only two other lodges. The rest of the 300 camps were gone by Sunday afternoon. Okay, it's now 11 o'clock Sunday night. After finishing a wonderful dinner and sitting around the campfire, my husband decided he'd go up on the hill and get our truck and bring it back to the primitive camp. Mm-hmm. While he was gone, all of a sudden, I started feeling really scared, and I'm not the kind of woman that gets scared easily.
Right.
The hair on my neck was literally standing on end, and I didn't know why. He came back with the truck. I still had on my white buckskin dress and was holding a candle lantern, and I walked to the truck to meet him. He was very nervous himself, saying he felt really strange. From a distance, he said, "I look like a ghost." Suddenly, these birds started flying above our heads, screaming a high-pitched, shrill sound. These were ravens and owls. This was at midnight sharp, okay?
Yes.
And this was totally weird. Ravens and owls don't go flying around doing this.
No, no.
By now, a spirit of sadness and remorse had overcome me, and I was crying and sobbing. We started hearing drums all over the area, and these were ghost drums, Art. There wasn't anybody there. Some were nearby and others were far away, and they were Indian drums beating fast like war drums.
Right.
We got into the teepee. I kept the fire going really strong. We smudged the lodge and said prayers.
Yeah.
We could feel and hear waves of ghosts coming by the teepee all night long, Art.
Night of terror for you, and the fast drums, too, the war drums.
Everywhere.
That's got to give you the feeling that here it comes, baby.
Yeah, we could hear jingles on the women's dresses like they used to wear.
Right.
Sometimes the drums were right on the other side of our number 10 canvas wall.
And so you lived through the night.
Yes, about 5 o'clock, I suddenly got really tired at 5 o'clock in the morning. I fell asleep with a roaring fire and the candle lantern lit. 30 minutes later, I woke up, Art, to a cold, dark teepee, and the canvas door was gone. I shook my husband and said, "My God, wake up." He got up and looked outside the lodge, and the teepee door was twisted and leaning up against the wall of the teepee. Now, that doesn't make any sense. There was no wind, and I had a heavy dowel on the bottom of that teepee door. There was no way that thing lifted up, twisted, and was leaning against there. But the really spooky part, Art, fire was out.
The fire was out, yeah.
And completely cold.
No, I've got you. Bad night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, that's a wild one. A whole Indian nation arose around them that night. Lucky to live through that. Oh, man. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
What is your first name?
Lynette.
Lynette, and where are you?
Oklahoma.
Okay.
Much like the last caller.
Right.
And when I was 9 and my little brother was 7, uh-huh. Our father owned a service station, which the service station was the front of the building, and the back of the building was our home. And as a lot of old service stations used to be, we lived on a major highway.
America from coast to coast used to be dotted with places where the gas station was out front, house
right,
was in the back.
Right, it was on Route 66 across the street from the cemetery,
across
the highway.
Oh, I traveled that road many times.
And it was a highway that had an overpass, and lots of people were killed there. But we were, my father also owned a restaurant just, you know, maybe 100 yards away from the service station.
Right.
And he and my stepmother were there running it one evening, and my brother and I were home by ourselves. It was a rainy night, and when Dad had closed the service station at about 8, he was very security conscious. He was a much decorated naval man, very no-nonsense kind of guy, not a paranormal believing individual.
Sure.
And my brother's bedroom was... The door was to his bedroom was the door that you could go through and go into the service station. And we were sitting on his bed playing something with our little cars or something, and we heard the door to the service station open, and we knew that wasn't right. And we heard footsteps, and we both looked up at the same time, and we looked at the door, the partition door.
Right.
And the doorknob was turning, and it scared us to death. And I ran to my father's bedroom, and I called the restaurant, and I told Dad that someone was in the service station. And he grabbed his pistol, and he came running. And he came in through the back of the house and came forward and unlocked that door and went through. And there was no one there, but we were behind him, and I looked down, and I saw wet footsteps leading from the front door to that door. Dad, I don't think, looked down. He was just checking the service station door.
Yes, of course.
And he saw nothing. And this was the same man that when he died in 1973, after a lengthy illness, he had built a house downtown in the little town of 1,000. And his wife survived him by 3 weeks. And she was the archetypal evil stepmother, had no friends and not a friend of ours. She had two girls that took care of her that my dad had hired, and she died 3 weeks later, and we were at the cemetery interning her, and one of the two girls told me that the day she died, the day they called me, before I got there, when someone dies at home, she had been ill and hypochondriac all her life, and so it was not unexpected, and she was older. A police officer just simply is sent, and they verify that someone's died.
Sure.
And no big deal. So the police officer was standing there talking to one of these two girls, and or I guess to both of them, and then he looked toward the front door, and then he looked to them. He said, "Who was the man that just walked through?" And both of the girls looked at each other, and they looked at him, and they said, "Well, we didn't see anything." What she told me, or both of the girls told me, is that they had seen a man walking from the front door of the house to the back of the house down the hall to this woman's bedroom since my father's death.
Well, there you are. Thank you. That's typical in so many ways. Frequently, when one person, one soulmate dies, the other follows very quickly. And, of course, the other aspect of that, again, a police officer there to actually observe this. A lot of cops see these things. A lot of cops. Why? Because they're around extremely stressful situations. Frequently, they are around or close to death and dying because they are called, right? All the time. They're called. So would it surprise you that they would see so many things? Not really. Not really. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Who, me?
You.
Oh, okay, me. Okay.
Yes.
I got a few stories, but I'll just tell you one of them.
Give me your best shot. What is your first name?
Heather, and I'm from Susanville. You don't know where that is. It's by Reno.
I'm pretty good. Yes, I've been to Susanville.
Spokyville. Yeah, well, anyways. Yeah, they filmed Deliverance here.
Uh-huh.
I'm kidding. Well, one of the stories I have is, some kids were saying, oh, there's a slaughterhouse, and it's supposed to be haunted, you know. And I'm like, yeah, right. So I just, me and my boyfriend and one of my other friends went there just to get scared. You don't actually expect to see anything, you know, you just want to get scared. And so we went there one time, we went there a few times. One time, it was like, we usually go there real late because we don't want the neighbors to wake up. And we went out there, and one time in the field, we heard somebody humming, like a lady humming a tune.
Yes.
We were shining the flashlights out there and everything. There's nobody out there. And we were like, oh, man, that's kind of weird. And that wasn't really scary, so we left. And then, like, we came back again. And for the last few days, we had dared each other to go into the actual slaughterhouse by the house. There was a real big house, and then there was a slaughterhouse. It was like a shed with a square fence around the front of it.
Right.
And so the guys took their turns going in there, and then it was my turn to go in. And normally the gate was open, and nobody had been there forever. The weeds are, like, 4 feet tall around everything, so you could tell nobody's been there for years or taking care of it. And the door was stuck open with the weeds. And when it was my turn that night to go, it was the next night, the door was shut. And I'm like, oh, that's just wonderful. So I was already scared. So I'm like, all right, I can do this. So I was trying to show off, you know, because I was the only chick there. So I, like, opened the door. And I just turned, I go right into the shack part. I looked, there's just like an old mattress and some chicken coop wires, and I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around in like where the fenced area is, and something like to the right of me, the door was on the right, the slaughterhouse door, and the other side was the left. And something from the left started running through the weeds, like, you know, like, you couldn't see anything, but it looked like there was something like 4 feet tall running through it. It went down this side, went the corner, and it was like going towards the door on the other side of the gate. And I was looking at the door waiting for something to just jump out me, and I was about to wet myself. And right before it got to the door, something, right where it has first started running,
yes,
something smashed into the fence. It just goes, and it just shook it back and forth, and the whole fence moved, and I just dropped to my knees and started crying, and I screamed for my boyfriend, and the two chicken shit, excuse my language, guys were in the car with the windows rolled up and the doors locked, and I was screaming for him, and I was crying. I was so scared, because I like getting scared.
And you had to go in yourself.
Yes, well, because we all dare each other, and I went all the way in, and I was scared so bad.
Oh, I can imagine this thing.
I mean, I was like, what the heck was that, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going on, because you never expect anything to really happen. And so I was like, oh, and I screamed for my boyfriend. He had to carry me out because I was so scared I couldn't even walk.
What do you think you saw? What do you think that was?
What do you think I was? Well, I was thinking about it, and I don't know, because there was a guy that was bitching at us about, I'm sorry, my language. I'm only 22. I can do that. There was this guy across the street that never wanted us to go there, and he goes, no, this place is not for sale, and no, you can't go there. And the house looked like it had covers all over the furniture in it and stuff. And there was another couple things that happened at that place, but I'm sure you're in a hurry to get me off the phone, so I won't tell you that. but
no, you tell a good story.
Oh, well, thank you. Something that ran around it, I don't know what that was, but I was talking to some friends, and since it was a slaughterhouse and they slaughtered cows there,
yes,
it sounds like the cow smashed into the gate and was trying to get out. You know what I mean? You know how something goes boom and it smashed into it and was shaking it back and forth. That's the only thing I can think of.
Do you think...
Maybe a cow trying to get out, you know?
Do you think animals have souls?
I didn't used to, but there's another... Can I tell you something else real quick?
Real
I was
quick.
In my apartment one time, and I was sitting there. It was 8:30 at night, and I was reading a book. And it was... I mean, I was wide awake, okay? And my boyfriend's in the living room watching TV, and I looked down at the end of my bed, and something... I couldn't see it. Four little paw prints jump up on the bed like a kitten or a puppy, starts running towards me, and right when it got to my leg, it disappeared. I go, what the hell was that? So I know that wasn't a person. It was obviously a little animal. Assuming that I guess they do. I mean, I don't know if they have souls. I really don't think they do. But I don't know. Maybe animals are like that, too. They don't know if they're dead or not.
Maybe they don't.
That has nine lives.
All right. Thanks for the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a good night. Oh, I think they have souls. I do, and I know all the arguments that would suggest it can't be, isn't, and the Bible says it cannot be so, and so forth and so on, but sorry, I believe differently. I think animals do have souls. I've always thought that. And if you're a real animal person, whether you're a dog person or a cat person or, you know, kangaroo person, whatever it is you fancy, then you know that all animals have separate, distinct, discernible, unmistakable personalities, real personalities. They have passion. They have love. They have dislikes. They have so many measurable things. They may not have speech, but that's okay. They don't have to talk to you most times for you to understand what it is they think or want or feel. And with so much, with emotions, with so many identifiable intelligence-like traits, well, I think they have souls. I've always thought that, and I suppose I always will. But moreover, I think I have encountered the ghosts of animals. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with...
Not much point in fearing him, because when he comes for you, it's your time, right? Might as well go peaceably.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295.
If you just tuned in, this is Ghost to Ghost. All we do is tell ghost stories all night long, a long tradition on this program. I don't even know how long, maybe well over a decade now. Real ghost stories. I will only take the very best ghost stories, so unless yours is a real hair raiser, just don't bother. Sit at home and listen on the radio, and those with the stories that will bring us out of our seats or keep them in them. Only those need call. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir. Where are you? What's your first name and where are you?
My name is Steve, and I'm from Union, Missouri.
Okay, Steve.
I just, last June, my family and I, we moved into a house that we rented. It was an older house, and I guess we were there for about a week. And I was sitting in the living room one night, and the living room had a shot you could see to the kitchen door. And I was sitting there, and I looked up, and there was this smoky gray figure of a man. And he was standing there. Now, I'm never one that ever believed in ghosts. So I looked down, and I was telling myself, well, when I look up, this thing's going to be gone. So I looked back up, and the thing walks into the room.
Okay.
It stands in the room for a couple seconds, and then it just like dissipates and disappears. So I don't want to be one of these people that run out of the house screaming in the middle of the night. So I get my kids, and I'm trying to do this real calmly, and we get to the front door, and I'm closing the front door, and up from the house comes this horrible scream. It was a male scream.
Okay.
So we left the house that night. I had a business trip, so I was gone for about a week. And when I came back, of course, I had talked myself out of it because I didn't believe in these things. And was hoping maybe it was a first-time incident, whatever, so we went back into the house. We had been there for a night, and it was one evening.
Now, why would you go after a scream?
Well,
no offense here, but I mean the scream would have done it for me, and yet you went back in the house.
I did go back.
How did you reason that one out with yourself?
Well, there was a lot of reasons. The financial reasons were one.
Yeah, I understand those.
You know, it's like you just moved. You're hoping the best, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay.
We went back in, and
it didn't sound anything like this, did it? Listen. It wasn't that bad, was it?
Oh, no. It was definitely a male scream, though.
Okay.
We went back in, and it was about the second evening there. I was actually talking on the phone, and the door started rattling. I mean, actually rattling, like somebody was rattling. I thought it was the kids playing, even though they had been sent to bed.
Right.
And I told them, you know, cut it out. And my daughter says to me, well, Dad, I'm not doing nothing, and my brothers are asleep. And about this time, from the basement, the scream starts coming again. And it got very, very cold. By the time I reached her, she was speechless, of course, and I got him out of there.
You mean suddenly cold?
Yes, very. It was definitely cold. And by the time I got to her, she was speechless. I got him out of there, and we stayed there for just, well, that was the last night that we ever spent there. And it was about 2 weeks later we moved again. Never experienced anything like
that
before.
With some financial loss, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was some financial loss, but peace of mind overruled that.
And living.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Yikes. Yeah, I understand that. I mean, you say I wouldn't go back in, but there are a lot of times you move and you just barely make it into the new place. And, God, you wouldn't want to give it up because you were scared, would you? So, you know, I say, hey, take off, that's that. But in reality, in the real world, you'd probably go back into that house. rather than having to move, you'd somehow rationalize it in your mind, and you'd go back in. Once. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Mr. Bell, and everybody else in Radio Land.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing this evening?
All right.
No, but I have to say that this is kind of the lamest ghost-to-ghost I've heard so far. I want to make a challenge to everybody out there to make it the best ghost-to-ghost.
Well, then that can only happen one storyteller at a time.
Okay. Well, I do my best, Mr. Bell.
We'll see.
All right. Well, my story takes place in Flin Flon, Manitoba, way up in the northern part of Canada.
Yes.
And the story is that there's a lake called Phantom Lake just because it's shaped like a phantom. And it is told that there is an old house where a man used to bring his wife on camping trips. Now, this man was seen to be, was told to be psychotic. And what he did is that he chained, when he went on his hunting trips, he actually handcuffed his wife to a bed. Now, on my gym class, we went across the lake, and we actually went by this house. And
why did he handcuff his wife?
I don't know, but it is found in the Gazette that it is true. I've actually went up to the library, and I have seen it.
Yeah, okay.
At any rate, I passed by the house with our gym class canoe trip, and one summer evening, me and a buddy of mine, our young brave souls, went out to actually see this house. As we came up to the house, it just seemed to be abnormally cold out that night. As we walked into the house, we just creeped inside, and we saw the bed where the woman was laying there. Oh, sorry, wait. We saw the bed where supposedly the woman was chained up.
Yes.
We took a look. We saw the handcuff marks on this old mattress, on this old metal frame bed. And all of a sudden, we heard a deep mumble, like a surrounded. And I like to point out, and all the windows were frosted up at the time. When I heard that scared the bejeebers out of me. I turned around, and I saw help on the window, and I saw steam coming up.
You mean help? You mean help written on the window?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And there's steam coming from it. As I turned around, me and my buddy saw this. We saw a light orb come towards us, shoot back, and just went right around the corner. Me and my buddy ran out, and we've just never been to that place again.
Not bad, sir. All right, thank you very much.
I have one question out there for the Laos people. It's told that there's supposed to be a dragon with a green orb. My girlfriend has shown me this picture of this, of a giant dragon with about four Navy soldiers holding it. I'd like to have information on that, if anybody could tell me.
All right, we'll see what we get. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, my name is Scott. I'm originally from Alabama, but now I live in Burlington, Vermont.
Yes, sir.
And one of my closest friends is a guy named Eugene McCurry. We've known each other for 25 years, and several times he's told me this story. And you know how people will tell you something, and if you've known them for a long time, you know they're telling the truth.
Of course.
Okay, well, this is one of those situations where I'm convinced, at least he believes, that what he saw was the truth. Okay. He was born in 66, and I think he said this happened when he was about 6 years old. So this would have happened probably sometime around 1971, 72.
Right.
He had a real poor family, and at that time they were doing a lot of farm work, like picking peas on people's farms, you know?
Sure.
And he was too young to work. And they, at the time, were living in this place in South Alabama, a little country place with the name of Niota. And apparently his family were out in the fields picking peas, and he was standing along the side of this field, and he saw what he claimed were the apparitions of two headless men dressed in black suits walking across the field directly at him.
Headless men.
Two headless men dressed in black suits, probably like undertakers, is the picture I have in my mind.
Yeah.
Walking across this field straight toward him, just totally, you know, scared him out of his pants.
Sure.
And then they vanished. And he's told me this story on several occasions.
You know what I would think if I saw that? I would think it was death coming for me.
Oh, I tell you, you know, of all the apparitions, me personally, of all the apparitions that I could possibly see, the idea of somebody with, with no head is just absolutely the most terrifying. That's
yeah, headless, headless is definitely not good.
Oh, yeah. Well, you hear these stories about Anne Boleyn in the Tower of London walking around without her head. You know, it just gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
But that is, that's to me, that's a very terrifying story.
Would have done it. Yeah, would have done it for me too, sir.
He's touched for the authenticity of that on several occasions. I wish he was here to verify it, but I swear to God I'm telling you the truth.
I'm sure you are. Thank you very much. All right, yep. Headless, why would something appear to us, why would a spirit appear to us in a headless form? I can only think of a few reasons. Either is a poltergeist screwing around with us, trying to scare the hell out of us, which it certainly would succeed. Or it could be, as I suggested, I might have guessed, that death was coming for me. Two headless horsemen, right, in suits, coming for you. And then what other possibilities exist out there? That there is some form of death where headless beings live? Better not think about that one. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Robert. I'm from Temecula, California.
Hi, Robert.
Originally, I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I lived in a small city outside of Portland called Milwaukee. And when I was probably about 6 years old, my parents had rented this house out in Milwaukee. And for the first time that we came up to the house, we kind of knew that there was something odd about the house. My dad could feel it, and I could feel it, but just me and him were the only ones in my family that could feel it.
Sure.
I had an older brother and a younger sister. And we were locked into a year lease on this place. We couldn't get out of that lease, so we were pretty much stuck there for the year. And during that year, I saw this thing, and to me it was clearly, truly just pure evil.
What kind of thing?
It seemed like almost like a demon to me. It wasn't. I never considered it a ghost, a shadow person, or an angel.
Maybe it was not a ghost. It could have been evil. It could have been evil.
So this,
but can you describe with any better detail?
Yeah, this thing used to hang out in my bedroom window at night. And he would sit there all night long watching me.
How did you stand that?
Well, I wasn't scared of it. At six years old, you pretty much got an open mind in certain things.
Yeah, but six-year-olds can feel evil, too.
Yeah, I knew it was evil. I knew it was bad, but I knew I was safe as long as I was in my room. And I knew that this thing would not enter the house unless it seemed like it had been invited into the house.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it was out there.
Waiting.
Yeah, it was out there waiting.
Maybe for an invitation.
Yeah.
I got you, sir. Thank you. There was an interesting... somebody sent me an interesting fast blast from, I think, the Chicago area. Yeah, here it is. Mandy in Chicago says, you know, can't call at work. I saw... This is tonight. I saw a burly man dressed as a lumberjack, flannel cap, suspenders, at my window, looking in, seemingly tired and lost. And then she adds, I'm on the 9th floor of a high rise. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Nathan from Sacramento.
Welcome.
Thank you. I've listened to your show for a long time and Ghost to Ghost for a lot of years, and finally I'm calling in with a story.
Yes, here you are.
Great. This happened to my family, about 15 years ago when my daughters were about 4 years old. And my ex-wife and I sublet a house for the summer. And shortly after we moved in, we started, my ex and I argued a great deal, and our daughters started having nightmares. And they would tell us that they, both of them, had the same dreams on different nights, and would tell us that they saw a red lady in their room.
A red lady?
Red lady. This woman that was all dressed in red.
Huh.
And this went on for
gosh, the whole time we were there. And shortly before we moved, we were talking to the neighbors trying to figure out what was going on because it was clear that there was something there, you know, some energy in the house.
Sure.
And found out talking to the neighbors that the original owners of the house, this was not a real old house, about 10 years old probably, the original family, the wife had committed suicide in the children's room, had cut her wrists, and that when one of the children came home from school that day, they found their mother in their bedroom covered in blood.
Oof.
And so we, you know, made the connection that that was some energy residual from that was what my daughters had been dreaming about that whole summer, and we were happy to move out.
I assume that you're aware that people who investigate know about ghosts are almost universally agree that people who, for some reason, people who commit suicide tend to stick around more than others at a much greater rate than others. Now, I'm not exactly certain what that means, and I've always tried to think, what might that mean, that a suicide would be stuck here? There's some sort of course, biblical, I think, prohibition against taking your own life. So, it may mean that for a while you don't get to go where you're supposed to go otherwise.
It could also be that the energy of such things are so intense and so horrible that they imprint themselves on the place for years after.
I think that I would rather believe that explanation rather than thinking it is a soul stuck in some horrible, repetitive thing. Thank you very much. Suicides. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi. Yes, sir, it's a pleasure to speak to you.
Where are you, sir?
My name is Mark, and I'm calling from Bradley, Illinois, and I'm listening to you through 890 AM WLS in Chicago.
WLS, of course. Go ahead.
Yes. My story goes back to 1989 in the summer when I was 14. And the house that my mom and I moved into late November of 87 there in Paw Paw, Michigan, was a 110-year-old house, and it was very, very spooky. It was across the street from a cemetery. And, well, in the summer of 1989, I was watching the Bulls lose, and I walked from the living room to the kitchen. And the door to the upstairs was always kind of a scary place. And the damn thing, it opened by itself.
The door did, as you were approaching it.
The door to the upstairs area, which there have been rumors and newspaper articles through that area that the upstairs, a baby had died in it in the early 1900s, and there was a lady upstairs that died, and
yes,
it was really, really scary. And anyway, the door opened by itself, and
you saw the door with your own eyes open by
itself. Oh yeah, no doubt about it. So,
like, come on in, bud. Right?
And it was.
Listen, I've got to take a break here. Can you stick around? Finish your story.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, stay right there. It's a good place to leave it, where the door opens by itself. I've seen the movies. I know what that means. You go through, and you're a headless guy in a suit. From the high desert, this is Ghost to Ghost AM. I'm Art Bell.
Take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. 3. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
We are under a Halloween full moon. Won't be another one like it. Hasn't been one like it since 1955, and you're not going to see another one for 19 years. And on top of everything else, this is Ghost to Ghost AM. Back into a Halloween night, and back to you, caller. You're back on the air again.
Yes. There at that point, I looked up to the stairs, and there was a woman on a cross down on me.
Did you say on a cross?
Yeah. It was bad. It was really bad. It was so bad it. I urinated in my pants, and I went into the bathroom and prayed, pretty much. So
it'd be about all you could do.
I was scared, but you know, it. So, make a long story short, the weird thing about the whole piece of property was, we were renting at the time. I got kicked out of this place. Because my mom and her boyfriend and stuff, and I left in 91 when I was 16, and it took about 2 years for the house to be sold by the landlord, and the guy who moved in demolished the 115-year-old house. He built a new one, and the weird thing is that he got married or was already married, had a kid, a baby, who coincidentally lived in right around the same area upstairs. And during that time, when he moved in, he tore down about, he ripped out about 150 to 100 trees that were pretty much kind of considered sacred. These were old trees, 100, 150 years old, and
right.
It's almost as if, there were rumors, just all kinds of scary, scary rumors going around through the town, and the baby died of cancer, his wife died of cancer, and the last thing I heard was the guy just picked up and left.
Wow.
It was bad.
Maybe all this time in tearing down the house, in building a new house, then in tearing down trees, he was trying to stop whatever it was. Had that occurred to you?
I don't know. I don't know, but I know that, I mean, it was just downstairs. We had a cellar, and we'd hear strange things at night, and at one point when I was seriously depressed as a teenager living there, I asked for a spirit to come down and try to help me, and I kid you not, Art, I heard footsteps at one point coming down the stairs, coming to help me. And then at that point, I thought it was the devil, and I asked for it to go away.
And it went away.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, I was so seriously depressed that and it's going to sound bad. It's going to sound really bad, but it's the absolute truth. I asked the devil to help me, to
Do you,
really,
do you
I,
do you I'm, think the devil helped you?
He was offering to help. Something came walking down the stairs, and I absolutely prayed for it to go away.
So that what you asked for help was the devil, and when it began to approach,
when it started walking down the stairs, I got completely scared, completely scared, and I.
That's called a foxhole conversion. Thank you very much. But I don't blame you. This is something I've never understood of people who make deals with the devil. Never have understood it, never will. If you conclude there is a devil, there is a dark, evil force with which you can bargain if you so desire. Once you have realized that such a force exists, then in your mind, how can you not realize that the opposite force exists, thereby immediately understanding the magnitude of the decision you're about to make, the bad decision you're about to make, that will bear on eternity for you. And so once you realize the one, how can you not realize the other? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Art, hi. How are you?
Fine. What is your first name and where are you?
Mike from Sarasota, Florida.
Okay, Mike.
This happened when I was about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And It was kind of like a nightmare the way you remember it, but it actually happened. And I was laying in my bed, and, you know, my parents were in the living room, and all of a sudden I felt this, like, this presence like everybody talks about, and something, like, staring at me. And I looked out the window from my bedroom.
Yes.
And there was a, you've been calling them shadow people, there was a shadow, you know, the head of a person. And this was like in 66, you know how they wore the men would wear those hats and the long coats, it was wintertime?
Yes.
That's what he was dressed in, and that's all you could make out. Anyhow, I just laid there for I don't know how long, and I finally was able to just scream. And my parents came running in, and they were like, what's wrong? And I was saying, you know, there's a man at the window. And my parents, you know, ran over, and like I said, it was wintertime. All the windows were frosted up, but my window was, there was no frost on it.
Huh.
And so they went to the front door, and across the way was a schoolyard. And they could see the figure of this man, like I described, going across the schoolyard. So my dad went out after him, and he'd gone around the corner. My dad was going to, you know, follow his footprints, and there weren't any. But what's really strange about it is, I mean, you know, that was pretty scary for me. But my wife is the one who wanted me to call because she found out we've been married 10 years, and 10 years ago, my mother told my wife, which she'd never told me. A week before that had happened, my parents, you know, tucked me into bed, and they came in like 20 minutes later to say goodnight.
Yes.
And I wasn't there. And they couldn't find me.
And you weren't there?
I wasn't in bed. So they thought maybe I'd gotten up to, you know, go downstairs and play or something. They looked all over for me. They couldn't find me. And like I said, this was a little bit before this had happened. You know, so it was winter. And they looked all around for like 3 hours.
And you weren't there?
No, till 1 a.m. My father finally happened to look up. I was sitting on the roof of the house. And, you know, there was no way I could get up on the roof. You know, there was no ladders around or anything. I was just sitting there.
What do you think happened to you?
I have no idea, but, I mean, I
guess... Have you considered the possibility that you were abducted?
Can I tell you, you know, I thought you might say that because yes. My wife and I have listened to you for a few years.
Yes, then you know how I think.
Well, you know, the thing about street lights, you know, going out?
Yes.
To the point of, like, people that are with me for any length of time will comment, like, you know, it's so strange when I'm with you.
Yes, I've heard this from so many people, sir, that streetlights extinguish and or go on as you walk down the street. I'm familiar with the phenomena. Some people will attempt to explain it by explaining there are a certain type of, there's a certain kind of streetlight that does that, but I've never seen one. Never. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, my name's Patty. I'm calling from Northern California.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, and I listen to you on KDAC.
All right.
And my story's not really that scary. We've had some scary encounters, but it's kind of interesting. Many years ago, I lived with a truck driver named Richard, and he was a real good stepdad to my kids, and especially my oldest son was really close to him. So even when we split up, we all stayed good friends, but he had some problems, and he took his own life.
Oh.
And this was some time ago, but maybe about a year after that happened, my kids and I were living at a isolated ranch in Colorado, and
right.
It was like a 800-acre ranch on the edge of a wilderness area. I mean, we were way out in the boonies. And we were 30 miles from the closest grocery store. And one night, we were sleeping, but my oldest son was 15 at the time, and he was awake. And he said, here's this truck, this diesel, come up our driveway. And he thought maybe it was a hay truck or something that had gotten lost looking for a ranch or something.
Yeah, diesel is unmistakable.
Yeah, you know, and he's thinking, well, you know, maybe it's a hay truck, whatever, you know. But and he said the guy gets out and starts knocking on the door. So he tried to wake me up, tried to wake up his sisters, tried to wake up his brother. Nobody would wake up. He said it was really eerie because normally I'm a light sleeper, but he said none of us would wake up. So he answered the door, and it was Richard.
You're sure?
Oh, he's sure.
He's sure.
Oh, yeah. He said he came in, shook his hand, sat down and talked to him, and Richard was a big Pepsi drinker. He loved the stuff, and he
right.
went out to the truck and got some Pepsis and brought them in, and my son said they sat there and talked for a couple hours and drank Pepsi. And
now your son said that Richard was full form. I mean,
right. I asked him, I said, well, what did it feel like when he shook your hand, you know?
Right.
And he said, just like if anybody else shook your hand, solid and real.
That's very unusual. Normally, spirits are unable to manifest that physically.
Well, he actually came to another time after this, but on this occasion, the odd thing is, in the morning, you know, he's telling us the story, and we're kind of going, oh, yeah, all right, sure, you know?
Right.
And but we looked, and there was Pepsi cans on the table. And we said, this is, we were 30 miles from a store that was, even if there would have been one open, you know, at this time of night.
Yep. Well, again, you know, there's something about those who take their own lives. I don't know what. I just know there is something different, and by percentage, there are many more of them than of others, and I don't know what that means.
Yeah, well, he really identified with his job, too, so I wasn't surprised that he came in his truck, you know.
Well, it's good to know there's diesels on the other side.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Take care. There just is something about those who take their own life. They're in for a bit of a different ride, I suspect. You're not supposed to do that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Debbie. I'm from Eugene, Oregon.
Yes, Deb.
I'm originally from Portland.
Okay.
And I've had several paranormal experiences, and every time there was that soul-gripping or spine-gripping cold that you can't explain. It's not an
experience. No, I know. I hear that from so many people.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. But my scariest story is when a ghost yelled at me.
Yelled at you?
Yes. And a friend of mine, an ex-roommate, who is a chiropractor, and his name happens to also be Art, invited me over to this 100-year-old house that he wanted me to see because he knows that I love antiques. And this house is in the Selwood district of Portland, where I'm originally from. And this house was really a weird house. The base of the house scooped out like a skirt, and all of the archways in the house were in the shape of huge skeleton keyholes. It was really a weird house.
Ooh, that is weird.
It is.
Yeah.
And then I was looking around, and his roommate was a woman who had children, and we saw the whole house, and her room was decorated in antique lace. It was absolutely beautiful. And there was one room that had nothing in it, and the whole house was decorated, and I said, why is this room empty? And he said the children were in it, but they didn't like it, so they moved out.
Uh-huh.
Later on, I came upstairs to use the restroom, which old houses have, and I walked into the room to see the stained glass windows. And halfway through the room, a ghost popped up in front of me.
That looked like what?
He was a large man. He was bald. He had a brown suit and a white shirt. And I knew he was a ghost because I could see the wall behind him. And he had no feet. I could see him, but I couldn't see his feet. He just stopped right at his ankles. And he immediately raised his finger and pointed to the door. And he said, get out of my house!
Oh, my God,
oh
really?
Oh, my God. I swear this is a true story. I ran so fast that I tore the carpet runner off of the stairs when I went down the stairs.
Wow.
And I went down and told my friend about it. And he immediately wanted to meditate for the ghost to leave the house. This is really true. And I wanted to leave, but he said, well, let's just sit down and say, you know, to meditate for the spirit to leave. So we did that. And then right above us where this room was, where this ghost had been seen by me, I swear to you, we heard footsteps walking out of the room and coming down the stairs. And I was out of the house. We both ran out of the house. We both ran out. I would not go back in the house.
So much for meditation.
Oh, I had to have him go back in and get my purse and never win him again.
Good for you. Next time, don't let him talk you into the meditation thing.
Yeah, I'm not doing that again.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Take care. Oh, my. Yeah, when you get yelled at by a ghost, when it shakes its finger at you, get out of my house! You don't go down and meditate. You get out of the house. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How are you tonight?
I'm okay. Where are you?
I'm in a little one-horse town called Central City, Nebraska.
All right. Welcome.
And I hear you from on an Omaha station.
That's right.
Yeah. My dad and I drove tractor-trailer for 15 years together. He drove it many years before that and a few after that, but then I started getting involved having babies and everything, so I quit.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was during the mid-70s, and we were hauling produce from Homestead, Florida. We picked up avocados and limes, and we'd take it to the West Coast. Well,
right.
Sometimes when we had to reload, we'd have to go all the way down the coast picking up partial loads
right.
to go back to Florida.
Gotcha.
Or other places. But anyway, my dad, this one day, I hadn't been feeling very well, so he took the whole day reloading, going down from Northern California down towards Indio there to finish off the load. Well, I got up, and it was my turn to drive, and he got us about, not too far from the Arizona border. And it was beautiful night, clear, everything was just clear, but there wasn't a lot of traffic. And so I was feeling great. I mean, I'd been driving for quite a few years, three to four or five years then, back then. And I always liked driving nights, and it was a beautiful night. There wasn't that much traffic. And I don't know if you know, but there's four lanes with a large median between it.
Right.
Going through Arizona there. Anyway, I was feeling good, laid back, just going like mad. And I guess I had my headphones on, and good music, and going real well that night. And all of a sudden, I guess about 2 hours into the night, my dad was already in bed sleeping, and I saw I saw way out in front of me a woman, what appeared to be a woman with long hair in a white dress. A long white dress.
In the middle of the highway?
Well, she was actually standing on my lane, the slow lane.
Okay.
And she was waving her arms, like, to stop me.
Right.
Well, I couldn't just slam on the brakes. So you don't do that with a big rig.
No, you don't.
Kill the guy in the back and throw him through the windshield if you do. So by the time I got up there, I was just about level with where she should have been. I got it stopped, and I got out of the truck. I walked all the way around the truck, and I couldn't see anything. And when I got back in the truck, I scratched my head. You know, I thought, well, I'm not tired. There's nothing wrong. What's going on here? There's no gal. Well, then my dad said, what's going on? I said, nothing. Go back to sleep, Dad. I thought I saw something in the road. He says, well, are you tired? I said, no. He said, okay. He rolled over and went back to sleep. Well, I drove about 4 more hours. And the same thing happened again. I saw way out there, I saw this lady, small little woman with a long white dress on.
Yes.
And waving her arms like mad. And then I haven't had things like this happen. So I thought, what is going on? Anyway, by the time I got the truck stopped again, I should have just passed where she was at. I got out of the truck, walked back around the truck, looked everywhere. Because it's pretty well lit out there. There's like lights. Along that stretch of highway.
Sure.
And there was nothing there, nothing anywhere. I got back in the truck, and my dad said, what's going on? I said, Dad, maybe you ought to get up. So he got up, and I told him what was going on, and he said, are you tired? I said, no, Dad, I'm getting there, but I'm not tired yet. And he said, well, I feel pretty good. Why don't I take over? I said, well, okay, but I'm not going to go to bed. I'm going to sit up for a while.
Okay, we don't have much time here.
So he went on down the road, and about, he hadn't been driving, but maybe an hour and 40 minutes or something like that, came upon a crashed car in the middle of the median.
Yes.
A gal in a wedding dress broke her neck. Dead. The car was upside down.
Oh, my God.
That was scary.
That's your version of I See Dead People.
Yeah, well, I had never done it before.
Yeah, that's your version of I See Dead People. There's a lot of stories, about truck drivers and the road. And maybe that's because a lot of people die on the road. This is Ghost to Ghost AM. I'm Art Bell.
Want to take a ride?
Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
That's Gordon Lightfoot. I got to interview Gordon, and he's a haunting kind of guy in real life. He really is. His music is absolutely incredible and reflective of the kind of person that he is. When you hear an interview with Gordon Lightfoot, it's kind of listening to this song. Anyway, we'll be right back. More Ghost to Ghost right around the corner. Once again, into a Halloween night, 2001. Hi there, what is your first name and where are you, please? Hello?
Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi there, this is Matt calling from Temecula, California.
Yes, Matt.
A couple years ago, my wife and I were house-sitting for her parents. Now, mind you, this is the house that she grew up in.
Sure.
And what was going on is it was late at night, maybe, I guess, about midnight. We were in the back office playing on the computer and the Internet, and all of a sudden we started to hear what sounded kind of like a music box, you know, ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yes.
And but it sounded like it was about a foot away from our faces. You know, there's music boxes, you know, in the house, not really in that room, but around the house, so we just kind of blew it off. A few minutes later, it happened again. We decided, okay, this is kind of strange, so we're just going to go out in the other room, maybe watch some TV, maybe go to bed. Well, we got out there watching TV a few minutes, and ding, 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 right in front of our faces again.
Again.
About the same distance. This was just getting a little bit too weird. There had been several other occasions in that house that strange, unexplainable things were happening. But we decided, okay, this is too strange for tonight. We're going home. You know, we got our baby at the time and took her home. Next morning we came back and scared the heck out of us. What had happened was going upstairs, the door to the attic was kind of on the wall with a latch on it.
Right.
Well, the door wasn't there anymore. It was laying all over the stairs in about 100 pieces.
Oh, my gosh.
It had been kicked out or something. It had to have been from the inside by the way that all the wood was scattered all over the stairs. Have no clue what it was. The only thing we can imagine was it was the resident ghost in the house, and it was mad.
Well, whatever it is or was, you wouldn't want it angry at you.
Absolutely not.
I understand. Yeah, once you've seen something kicked in from the inside, then you're going to realize that either it is now with you, or it has escaped, or it's laying for you. That would be easily enough for one night. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
Jack, and I'm calling from Fairborn, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
And I have a story that dates back to right around 1970. When my family and I were living in a town called Edison, New Jersey,
we had
been living in an old farmhouse sitting on 12 acres of land. And I was 9 or 10 at the time, and my brother was 4 or 5, and we shared an upstairs bedroom. This had to be 3, 4 in the morning. I felt like I needed to use the bathroom. And so I get up, put my little feet on the floor, and I start walking out to the hallway. Something didn't feel quite right. You know, I have that sinking feeling that something is just wrong.
Sure.
I go to the bathroom, finish up, come out, walk back in the hallway, and this black presence, Art. I mean, it was so black it stood out against the dark of night in the hallway.
As a form?
As a form. It was just an oval shape, indistinct, but dark.
Not good.
Cold.
Not good.
It slammed into me and said, "Don't go in." I heard this in my head.
Don't go in.
Don't go in. I was trying to go back into my room, and there's my brother laying there in the bed, being enveloped by this thing.
Holy moly.
Anyway,
And so what did you do?
All the cats in the house started yowling, and we must have had six, seven cats.
Yeah, cats know about these things.
And three come from upstairs, and four come out of the my parents' bedroom.
They had a lot of cats.
And they're screaming, yelling, the fur is flying, and they're in the room. They're with my brother on the bed, and they're beating the hell out of whatever this thing was on them.
Yep, there you are.
After it was over, he said, Jack, what was that? What was it? He had ice crystals in his hair.
Holy smokes.
So he said, I was trying to scream. And nothing will come out. Not a thing.
Did you, after this being had stopped you, and you saw it at work on your brother with the cats around, could you have gone forward at that point?
No, I was frozen.
Frozen, yeah. Oh, I understand that, too.
I was there, stuck to the spot.
Yep. And so you went to your parents?
Run to my parents' room. There's something wrong with Dennis. Something's in there with him.
Right.
Immediately, my father wakes up, and he's a police officer in the town. He grabs his gun, and he runs into the room. And this thing is on the wall, and it slides through the window, not out the window.
Hmm.
Through the window. My dad grabs my brother and he says to my mom, he's ice cold and I don't feel anything. Takes him to the hospital. The next morning he gets back and he tells me that your brother was treated for hypothermia. They're going to keep him overnight.
Holy smokes.
So I am never without cats. My brother's never without cats. I swear by him. I mean, and I don't know what was shadow people or whatever it was, but that lingers in my mind, Art.
I'll bet that'll be there forever imprinted on your brain.
Well, I'll tell you that.
I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Art.
Yikes. Icicles in his hair, treated for hypothermia. I don't know. What do you think happened to him? What do you think that was? What do you think could cause those kinds of physical manifestations? Probably nothing good. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Boy, Art, that story gave me hypothermia.
Yeah.
This is Austin in Flagstaff.
Yes, sir.
This particular event I'm going to tell you about happened in 1962. It was right after I graduated high school. It was the summer after graduating. I just bought my first car, which was a 1959 Renault Dauphine. I don't know if you remember those.
We all remember our first cars.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was about the size of a VW Beetle, except it wasn't quite as stable. But being this wild-haired 17-year-old, I drove this thing around town like it was a Porsche.
Oh, yeah. It's a car, you know.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun. One night, a buddy of mine and I were cruising around out in La Habra, California, near where we lived, and he said, oh, why don't we go out to Sleepy Hollow? And I said, what the hell is Sleepy Hollow? He says, well, it's a place out in Brea. So the next thing I know, this is right around midnight. We're driving down Brea Canyon Boulevard. This is in the boonies in those days. It's probably all houses by now.
Sure.
But we're going down the road a couple of miles. He says, hey, that dirt road up ahead, turn off to the right. So I stop and I turn off onto this dirt road and we start going up into the hills. And there's just a few cabins there and the road is so narrow that if another car had been coming down, we would have no way to pass because it's very, very narrow and very rocky, and it's just a dirt road. And you can see everything that's there. It's just a few houses scattered here and there, and there's only one road in, and that's the only road out. And finally we get up to the top of the hill, and the road suddenly makes a jog to the left, and we empty into this open rectangular area that's about 80 feet square. And right there in front of my headlights is parked a 1939 Cadillac hearse. Well, I can't even imagine how that Cadillac hearse would have even gotten into such a small passageway.
Right.
But the hearse wasn't even what I was thinking about at that moment, because right there dead centered in front of my headlights is the Phantom of the Opera. That's the only way I can describe it. If you remember what the Phantom of the Opera looked like in the old movies.
Oh, sure.
The sunken eyes,
yes.
The hollow cheeks, the white, pale complexion. And these huge black pits for eyes are staring right into my headlights with what I can only describe as unflinching menace. Well, it took me about three quarters of a second to turn that Renault Dauphine around in its tracks.
Yes.
And I raced back down that dirt road until I got back to the pavement.
Uh-huh.
We jumped out of the car. I opened the popped the front hood. I grabbed my tire iron. And by this time, we're starting to recover a little bit from the initial shock. And I said, let's go back and take another look.
Oh,
and
no. That's where... All right.
And I'm thinking, this has got to be a prank. This is somebody playing a gag. You know, this can't be real.
Oh, okay.
I'm coming back to reality here. We turn the car around. We drive back up the dirt road very carefully, watching everything along the way, just in case we're going to run into this thing prematurely.
Right.
We get to the top of the hill. We make the left jog. We come into the opening, and there's nothing there.
Nothing?
Nothing.
No Cadillac?
The Cadillac is gone.
Huh.
Now, mind you, this rectangle is completely encased on all four sides by trees and brush. It's very heavily brush. And there's only this one little entrance in and out. So I pulled into the center of the area. We got out of the car.
Yes.
We looked around on the ground. I could see my Renault Dauphine tracks in the dirt where we had spun around. We walked over to where the hearse had been parked. No tracks. Nothing. My friend walks over to me, and he looks me in the eye, and he says, Austin, I think maybe this is an omen about your driving. About my driving. And I just laughed it off. We got back in the car. We started driving back down the dirt road. We got back onto Brea Canyon Boulevard. We went about a mile, driving as I always normally did. We hit this particularly tricky turn, and the car flipped over three times.
Wow. What a story. You swear that's true?
I will send you signed affidavits from the people who were there, from the witnesses. My best friend, Campbell Stark, was with me. I mean, in fact, this is one of the stories that's going into a book I'm writing.
That's a hell of a story. I don't know what to tell you. I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Boy, I've got to think about that one a little bit. That's a pretty stark warning. Phantom of the Opera, right in front of you with a hearse. Yeah, you could take that one as a warning, couldn't you? One thing I forgot to ask. Wonder if his driving improved. East of the Rockies, you're on the... Well, he's still here. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, my name is Rosemary. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, Rosemary.
How are you?
I'm all right, although the stories are getting a little strange.
Yeah, that last one was really good. Okay, my story kind of has a lot to it, so I'll start with this. My mom and I used to go down to Branson, and we found this lady that had two bed and breakfasts.
Right.
And she had one in town on the Strip, and then she had one out of town in Walnut Shade on the outskirts of Branson. And we stayed in that one a lot because it was nobody else would stay out there, and it was private. One morning, I wanted to sleep in, and my mom went into town, and I had gotten up after she had left, and I was downstairs in the living room playing on the couch with my Barbie dolls, and all of a sudden the fireplace doors started to open and close, and it was a little windy outside, but I mean these really opened to close.
You mean, what kind of fireplace doors? The type that, you know...
The folding kind.
The folding kind, opened and closed?
Uh-huh. And this was a...
I could imagine one or the other, depending on a draft, but not opening and closing.
And that's what it did. And this was a really old, cool house. And I thought, well, shoot, you know, maybe it was a draft, but no. I said, if something is in this room, then move the handles on this... I had a shopping bag on the coffee table.
Yeah.
I said, move the handles on this shopping bag. And all of a sudden, it moved the handles back and forth and back and forth. And I scrammed up those stairs to the top bedroom. Like you've never seen anybody run before. I sat up in that room, and I looked out the window over the driveway, and I thought, I knew exactly at 1 o'clock my mom would come back from in town. It wasn't 1 o'clock yet, and there's a bathroom upstairs, and the toilet kept going off and on, and these doors between the rooms kept opening and shutting.
Oh, my.
I thought, well, maybe I'll run back downstairs. But I went out into the hall, and I looked into the stairwell, and there was something that looked like from Scooby-Doo in orbit. orb, like, just glowing on the wall. I ran back into the bedroom, and I waited till 1 o'clock, and 1 o'clock on the dot, she pulled in that driveway. I ran down those stairs through that orb so fast.
Through the orb?
It was, like, right above me. It probably could have touched my head. I just didn't even care. I ran down those stairs, opened that door. I was crying, and she wouldn't believe me.
I understand. Now,
but come to find out that the house in town that this lady had in Branson, there were many stories that people had seen things in that house, but nothing had ever been seen out in the house.
You realize, other than this audience perhaps, there are a lot of people who would say, what a bunch of baloney.
Oh.
But, you know, once you've seen it yourself, you don't have any more questions. I mean, you don't doubt for one second, do you?
No. I'll tell you something else, Art. That night, because we had another night in that house, Mom snored, so I had to sleep downstairs in the downstairs bedroom, and I heard moaning behind the bed, and it sounded like a woman who would have, like, a bad stomachache.
Moaning behind the bed.
Yes.
Ugh.
And, you know, there's really nowhere to go when you're stuck out there in the middle of the night, and you're trying to get through another night, so I wouldn't slept on the couch.
Well, how come your mom wouldn't believe you? I mean, obviously, as you told this story, she must have understood that you were really terrified, but just figured you had a bad dream, or what?
She just said I had a wild imagination. I was alone and got scared.
Yeah, that's what they always say.
How kids do.
Yeah, wild imagination. Go to bed. I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Please wait.
Hello. Going once.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
That was once and a half, and you made it. Where are you, and who are you?
My name is Arlene, and I'm from Washington.
Arlene.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to have to speak up good and loud for me, Arlene. You're not too strong.
I know.
You're in the state of, huh?
Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Well, I began living in a rental home, and it was like the weirdest experience of my life. There were like voices and sounds, you know, coming up from the basement, and it was an unfinished basement, and just like the gloomiest one ever.
Arlene?
Yeah.
You didn't end up going down there, did you?
No, I completely blocked it off.
All right.
On my couch.
Listen, we've got a break. Can you afford to hold on?
Sure.
All right. Most go to the basement immediately.
The world's on fire, no one can save me but you.
That's where the dismemberment usually takes place.
Strange world desire to make foolish people.
To reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Well, there have been some stories this morning. It's, of course, on mornings just like this that these kinds of stories get generated, isn't it? Halloween. Some might say once in a blue moon. Ghost to ghost. On a very early Thursday morning. And Arlene is back on the air. Arlene, go ahead.
Okay. As I was saying before, I'd hear sounds from the basement and people whispering in there and they banging on the ceiling, I guess. And what was really strange was whenever I'd go to take a shower, I'd feel like hands touching me, and nobody was in the house at all.
Really?
Yeah, and then there was
How old were you at the time?
I was 22.
Somewhat fetching, I presume.
You
see, I've always wondered what life would be like as a ghost. And surely what occurred to you would be one considered diversion.
I don't know. It was just really weird. There was like a loft going up the stairs, and every night I'd hear someone or something stomping up the stairs and going into these little loft rooms. And
I don't... Explain to me something. How could you be in the shower and feel invisible hands touching you?
I don't know. It was like a hand was touching me.
But stay in that house.
Well, I didn't stay long. I had a lease and I had to fulfill it, but as long as...
I understand.
As soon as that was up, I was gone.
Yeah, that's real life. I mean, people have financial obligations, and I always forget about that part, and they have to do what they have to do. Really strange. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Hands on you in the shower. In a way, if it's, you know, what we think it is, then it gives some hope about the other side. Now, that might not be the thing that you would do should you become a ghost, or if you're out there and a guy and understand, it might be. Something to think about. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Mary calling from Salem, Oregon.
Hi, Mary.
This story is kind of about my brother-in-law, Don.
Okay.
And we were having a birthday party, and it was kind of a premonition kind of thing. I decided to go out for burgers with a friend, and I had to wait because somebody had to move their car. And while I was out in front, we were living in the country by myself, I looked over, and there was this woman in like a 1800s shirt waist and long skirt, but I couldn't see her feet.
You couldn't see her feet. But you should have been able to see her feet?
Yeah. It was there. I should have seen her.
No feet is bad. Not as bad as no heads, but it's bad.
It was scary. So I closed my eyes and I looked back and she was gone. And my friend came out then and I told him all about it. And he was like, oh, wow. But we left and we went for burgers. And while we were gone, something really horrible happened. My brother-in-law had gone. They decided to go off in the woods. And while they were going down the trail, this boulder just out of nowhere came and, like, took his head off.
Oh, my God.
And so we got back, and here's the helicopter landing, life flight, and the ambulance is down, and they're performing CPR on him and everything.
Well, now, wait a minute. You said took his head off.
Yeah. Well, the top of his head. They were trying anyway. He died.
Okay, I get the picture. He died. He didn't make it.
No. But what was weird was it turned out, like 6 months later, a person that we knew came to us and kind of apologized. And she said that a couple days before, my brother-in-law, being a Wiccan, was out in the forest doing some sort of ceremony with a couple of his friends. And she didn't know what was going on. So she just, like, came up and la, 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 and put her cigarette out in the middle of their circle. And they got really upset. And all of a sudden, this like horrible dog kind of growling, kind of monster sounding thing came from the top of the hill, and they said, "Get out of the circle! Get out of the circle!" and tried to fix whatever it was, but they couldn't do it. So
aye, aye, aye.
He was worried, and he wouldn't tell me why he was worried for, you know, like 2 days before the party, and so some people think, you know, some of us think that whatever it was came and got him, but
he gave great offense.
Yeah.
Desecrated the circle. Bad news. Oh, bad news all the way around. Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Take care. Yeah, well, if you are going to open doors, you should be prepared to see what's on the other side. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, this is Roger. I'm calling from Kailua, Hawaii.
Welcome.
I listen to you quite often on KHVH.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to tell you something happened to me. Where I got my left leg broken. I decided to go fishing one day on my day off. It was at the place we call the Marine Corps Air Station Kaneohe.
Right.
It's on the east coast of Oahu, Hawaii. And I was authorized to go in some areas where some people aren't. So what they have a large volcano, extinct volcano on the base. In the center of it is the Marine Corps rifle range. Well, I was on the left-hand side, or the western side of the range, on the ocean side. And I had walked about a mile and a half from any living quarters. You know, wasn't anybody around me at all that, you know, that could see me.
Right.
And there was a 35-year-old man and his 8-year-old son followed me. They carried the lunch bag. I had my fishing pole, you know, bucket, stuff like that. And they were about 150 feet behind me and, well, about 15 feet up on a ridge. And they were just watching me and enjoying the scenery. And I got to this one area. I just decided to stop. I believe they used to bury the Hawaiian kings and stuff around there.
That's right.
Anyway, I'm used to going out there, and I was really enjoying the scenery. I almost forgot about going fishing. And I was on this large, flat, black area about, what do you call it, lava rock?
Right.
It was flat, maybe 30 feet deep, I mean, you know, the width of it, and 150 feet long, and there was no green, wet moss or anything. It was just as dry as it could be. You could do jumping jacks or anything and never slip. So I'm standing out there, really enjoying the scenery, and all of a sudden, kawhack, my left leg goes flying up in the air. I'm standing up now and just thinking about it because it went above my eyesight, you know.
Right.
And I had this instant shock and pain, but my arms, you know, I spread my right arm out to the right, my left arm out to the left to hold my balance, and I gently fell down to the ground, you know, using my right leg for balance. Meanwhile, my left leg is above my head, and boom, I hit the ground. So this man, the 35-year-old man, he comes running down the hill with his son over there and everything. He says, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And you know, it took him about, maybe 2 minutes to get to me. And I says, "Yeah, I'm fine." I says, "I don't know what happened." He says, "Well, that was really a neat kung fu kick." He says, "You do that often?" I says, "No." He says, "Are you okay?" You know, because I landed on my butt. And he says, "Wow, look at your leg. The back of your calf has a big footprint on it."
Wow.
And it was black. So anyway, and then my ankle started swelling up, and there wasn't any, we took a piece of driftwood or something, and he tied it up on my leg, and we had to walk a mile and a half back to my car. Well, it gets better because he took me to the Marine Corps hospital there at the base, and I spent about 2 hours in there. They put a full cast on my left leg. But I had to explain to the doctor what happened. And
right.
It was a Navy ensign and two corpsmen. So they write it in the logbook, and then they type it up in their computer system, and they give me a printout. He says, "I can't put this stuff in your log." Well, he did. He says, "You know what? I can't really leave this cast on you. It's an experimental cast." And he starts giving me this story. He says, "I have to send you over to... Tripler Army Hospital, which is about 16 miles away."
I know where it is.
And then it gets, okay, that was the 2:30 when my leg got broken. So this is now about 5:30 at night. They put me in an ambulance, send me over to Tripler, and I'm in there with a couple of Army sergeants and an Army captain, and then the full bird colonel comes in, who would never come in. You know, like it was such a little thing as a broken leg. And he just asked everybody to please step aside, and he took complete charge of my leg. And he started asking me all kinds of questions. So that was about 5:45, continued questioning me, and he says, "Well, you know what? We have to take this cast off because it's an experimental one."
What?
Yes, sir. Yeah, he took the whole cast off.
Again?
He took this... one of these power tools, you know.
Yeah, I know. cast on, cast off.
He continually kept on asking me all these questions. And then he starts out, he says, "Well, you know, what do you do for a living and all this stuff, you know, and what is some of your history?" Not the things that a normal doctor would ask you, you know.
All right.
So I just, having nothing to hold up, I go back all the way back to when I'm a private, all the way up to master sergeant. And you see, kept looking at me. It got to be around 9 o'clock at night, so that's 4 hours of intensive, and every word.
By now, your leg is ready to fall off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm laying on my stomach, and he goes in, and they're all taking pictures of it and everything. It was like the bruise by that time was nice and black and blue and just the same shape as like somebody had hit it with a bare foot.
Right.
He says, okay, time to put them back together. So they come along with this cast, and I can remember right now when he put it on, you know, how this material just gets red hot as it's solidifying on your leg. And it was the exact same material that they put on at Kaneohe. I says, wait a minute, you told me this was an experimental cast. I says, well, that was just to get you over here. We had to double-check everything. I don't know what it was that hit my leg, what it was that kicked me, or anything else.
Sounded like they wondered what it was.
Well, they were really wondering. And, you know, it's, to this day, I have no idea. But there was a clean break. My leg was broken half.
You don't,
my knee.
Broken in half. You don't, I appreciate the call. You don't hear about that very often. A severe physical manifestation from an encounter. You don't hear about that very often. A clean, broken leg by an unseen foot. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Happy Hallow's Eve.
And to you as well.
I am Brian.
Yes, Brian.
I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida. I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
And I'd like to say hi to Ramona. Happy Halloween. First-time caller, long-time listener, or I say first-time caller, first time I've gotten through. Tried many a times. And I feel blessed that I got through tonight.
Yes, sir.
I have two real quick ghost stories, and I'll tie them together at the end real quick. When I was a young child, we had an abandoned house within my neighborhood. And as young kids do, we used to go and explore. There was a shed, two-story garage attached to the house. And me and a young girlfriend at about the age of 11 rode our bikes about a mile down the road to get to the house. And we went up into the garage and was searching around. It was pretty much empty. There was a closet upstairs. And on the floor in the shed upstairs was some old, old, old newspapers. She picks up a newspaper and starts reading an article about how this man had taken a pitchfork and killed his entire family. As she's reading through this article, the door in this little closet upstairs falls open, being pushed open by a pitchfork.
Oh.
We lost it. We were out of there.
Yeah.
Bicycles move so fast.
Pitchforks. We've all seen the movies. We know where they end up.
Right.
They end up in your chest.
But I mean,
giving you enough time to look down and see that you have been stabbed by a pitchfork and you are now dying.
Right.
Oh my God.
I mean, and it was amazing because I mean, this entire place was basically cleaned out, other than these newspapers on the floor. And I mean, what are the odds of a pitchfork being in the closet when you're reading a story?
Slim and none.
Slim to none. Exactly. Yeah. The other story is my grandfather passed away. I grew up in a restaurant, opened in 1945, a family restaurant, lots of beans and chicken. About 2 months after he passed away, me and my father were running the restaurant. I was in the restaurant working. I'm standing up at a butcher block table, carving some beef, cutting a knuckle out of the side of beef. And out of the corner of my eye, I see my grandfather on his tippy toes, as he loved to be at the restaurant, peeking in a pot that was on the stove cooking boiling potatoes.
Yes.
I looked, I seen him, I looked away. At that time it hit me like, whoa, no. I looked back and he's gone, of course. But the way I tie these two stories together is that just seeing what I have seen of, there's been many other incidents where I've seen ghosts and different things happen. Tying it all together has given me a great peace in knowing that there is some sort of afterlife. There is some sort of spiritual life.
That does seem to be the net effect of having seen these things. It kind of ties things together for you. Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. We don't have a lot of time. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Jeremy from Vancouver.
Vancouver. Yes, hi.
Hi. This happened to a friend of mine in 1987 in Victoria.
All right.
You see? She had moved into one of those beautiful old Victorian mansions there And you know how the houses are divided up into suites?
I do.
Has their own suite.
Sure.
She had this wonderful clawfoot bathtub, which I had visited her. It was lovely. So she phoned me 2 months later and said that you know, she takes a nice bubble bath every couple nights or so. But she heard the girl next door, I guess the bathtubs are right up against each other in these kind of things.
Right.
And
They do that for the convenience of plumbing.
Yeah, and, you know, the walls are thin.
Sure.
She heard her crying in there, sobbing about something. You know, maybe she thought she had broken up with her boyfriend or something. Never
right.
really thought anything of it.
Right.
Well, she has a bath every couple days or so, and every time, you know, she'd have a bath, she'd hear her crying in there. And this went on for about 3-4 nights. When she started to take her baths, it'd get really cold in the room.
Yes.
And this was like 4 days went on, and a really bad smell started to come from the other side. And the smell got worse and worse. So
oh, boy.
She called the caretaker, and the police got into the suite. Unfortunately, the girl had killed herself. She had slit her wrists and neck in the bathtub.
Right.
But this really spooky thing about it was she had done it 2 weeks previously. She
oh, my God. Oh, my.
And this is a true story. I don't know if anyone in Victoria is listening tonight.
East of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-825-5033.
Friend Heather didn't last too long in that apartment. She moved shortly after that. But true story.
I removed the expletive, but I understand its use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Disturbing.
Thank you very much for the call. And that expletive probably should have remained in because it was contextual. Oh, man. To hear the moaning, perhaps a plea for the body to be discovered, and to hear that after the person had been dead for that long. I don't know. Well, you have now experienced ghost-to-ghost AM. Maybe you're an inch or two farther along the way. You know, and understanding that there really is something on the other side, because there is. If you have not personally experienced it, then if you only believe a small portion of what you've heard tonight, that should be enough. Anyway, that's how we do it. I'm Art Bell.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born.